This episode is brought to you by Shutterstock.com. With over 26 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, video clips, and more, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 30% off a new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code WOW8.
Orthide!
You are listening to The Instance.
Welcome back to The Instance. This is The Instance, episode 337. We're going to talk about World of Warcraft, Hearthstone, Diablo 3, and more today. Welcome back to the show, everybody. Like I said, episode 337. I'm Scott. That's Dills right over there. Dills, how's it going?
It's going good. I'm just, you know, lolling at all these noobs in Hearthstone who don't know how to play this five-day-old game at
Dude,
all.
You should start a stream where you just rip on people the whole time. I think it'd be great.
Totally going to do that. Totally going to do that.
That'd be awesome. Yeah, we're coming off a week of fairly heavy Hearthstone play. We both got betas last Friday, pretty shortly after the show ended.
Actually, we talked about it on the show. We actually kind of bitched at Blizzard.
Right.
They were like, hey, where's our beta key?
Yeah, shouldn't we have had these early? But the funny part was we basically said, you know, beep to beep, freaking breaking news. This is happening. It's all over Twitter. Something's going on. And then a fair decent number of people who I know in Blizzard emailed me and said, dude, slow down. This isn't true. And I went, oh, really? Oh, shoot. Well, I talked about it on the show. And then not 2 minutes later, everyone's getting beta keys. So I think even people in Blizzard in certain sections of Blizzard had a lead ceiling where they were not even aware that these keys were being doled out that day.
Well, it was funny because people in the chat room were already talking about it. I immediately went and looked at like the news for it, and there was nothing yet. There was no actual like official announcement.
Yeah.
So it leaked somewhere else, or somebody tweeted, or something like that, and that's where it broke initially.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a matter of hours.
Yeah.
Before it was out.
It was pretty much chaos immediately. Everybody wanted a key. People were mad who didn't get keys. People who got them were busy installing and playing. Live streams went up within a half hour after the keys came out. You know, it all sort of depended on whose bandwidth was the fastest and who could install it the quickest before they got their streams up. And, you know, it came out with no NDA, no restrictions. You were able to YouTube this stuff, to talk about it, to do whatever you want.
Which
is great.
Cool, because it's a game that's perfect for streaming, I think. It's one of those things where you can really follow along with what's going on easily. And, you know, I mean, like, most games are okay for it, but there's certain games where the action is just a little bit quick and intense and stuff. And this is slow, and you can kind of take your time and kind of figure out what's going on.
Games are quick. They're not too complicated. We're gonna get into the minutia of all of that coming up here on the show, so stay tuned for that, everybody. We will talk a bunch about that. Terpster is in... or was in at Gamescom in Germany and has now flown back to the UK and is at some sort of Minecraft Con UK thing today, which is why he's not here with us. But he did do a really cool thing. He sat down with Tom Chilton and Corey Stockton, who we just had on the show early last week, to talk more about WoW. It's the current state of things and stuff coming up. So two of the most important names on the WoW development team sat down with Terpster, talked. I sound like in a bar or something. I'm not sure.
Perfect.
And Patrick.
There's natural environment.
Nobody knows this, or nobody would know, because you're not going to hear it on the things. He didn't say anything. But Patrick was back there playing PR dude right behind them all, making sure they didn't say anything they regret. Yeah, pretty cool. Huh. So the whole Instance family, really. This is Patrick. I will not say anything. I will sit back here and gnaw on my cheese. So anyway, Patrick, when you hear this episode, good job. Way to go keeping Terpster in line and not asking too many questions.
I imagine everything Patrick owns, he has modded it in some way.
Of course he has.
I just feel like that's the way he lives his life.
That's how he rolls. He modded.
Yeah, like all of his plates have mods to them. All of his all of his forks, he's bent in a different way. He's like, this is a great mod. You got to check.
Patrick mods things so much that even the mod, his personal mime speaks. That's how modded his mime
is. Whoa, he's modded the mime.
So that it talks. It doesn't just act like there's a wall in front of it. It says, hey, there's a wall in front of me. What's the deal?
I'm stuck in a box. You guys get that mod mime talk, dude? It's great.
It's really good, man. It's really good. All right. So we're going to do this. This is how we're going to structure today's weird show. It's a little bit weird, but... Right up top, we're going to jump straight over into my interview that I did earlier this week. So on Wednesday night, we had, and we did it live, so a bunch of you may have even already heard this. And if you have, hey, listen to it again. It was pretty good. I sat down with Chris Metzen, Doug Gregory, and Laurel Austin, the team behind the Burdens of Xiao Hao short animated series that Blizzard recently put up on YouTube and other places. And it was I loved it. I thought it was freaking fantastic. Was it 5 parts, 7 parts, something like that? Whatever, I forget now. But if you haven't seen it, is it 7?
It's like an intro or something, and then there's, yeah.
I think there's another 6 after that, yeah. And it's all Lore Walker Cho doing his storytelling, and it's fantastic. And what I was interested in mostly is exploring this idea that Blizzard is doing content and creating stuff that it isn't necessarily tied to release dates or money or other things. I mean, ultimately it is, but to being able to spread the story out in a way that is not necessarily tied to a game is an interesting push for them. They've always pushed story, but I feel like this is a sign of something more. So it was a really cool opportunity, and I didn't know it at the time. I couldn't put the name with the art, but Laurel Austin is one of my favorite Blizzard artists. If you've seen the Hearthstone splash screen that was launched with the announcement of the game, with all these characters kind of huddled around the board, playing in kind of a dark tavern, that's her art. She's really, really good. And she did all the art for the Burdens of Xiao Hao. So anyway, if you love your Monkey King, then you'll love that series and you'll love this interview. I'm going to play it now. When we come back, we'll get to the big news of the week. We'll talk about Hearthstone. And then eventually in the show, we'll talk about what's going on with Terpster and while he was over at Gamescom. So here you go. Let's have a conversation with Chris, Doug, and Laurel.
Banda fi wanja. Yeah.
Hello, everybody. Scott Johnson here, and welcome to another supplementary interview. It happens to be talking about something I'm way into, and I know a bunch of you are as well. Some of you might be familiar with the brand new bit of lore that Blizzard released and handed to us, known as the Burdens of Xiao Hao. It kind of came out of nowhere. Nobody knew it was coming. It wasn't tied to any special releases, yet there it was. It was like a gift to people who are really into World of Warcraft and into the lore specifically of the Mists of Pandaria and the history of that great isle. Joining me today to talk about it, Chris Metzen, Senior Vice President, Story and Franchise Development, Lord of Lore at Blizzard Entertainment. Chris, welcome back to the show.
Hey.
It's good to have you back, man. It's been since early Mists, I want to say. So a lot has happened since you were last year.
Yeah, I can't even really tell time anymore in the practical sense. It has been eons.
Well, it's good to have you back. Also with us, Doug Gregory. He's the director of Burdens, worked on with Blizzard for a bunch of years now, and has helped on projects like World of Warcraft, Pearl of Pandaria, which we've talked about on the show before, Diablo Book of Cain, and the upcoming Diablo Book of Tyrael. Doug, welcome to the program.
Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm great. It's great to have you on. Thanks for being here. Big fan of some of your other work as well. And now somebody who I didn't know I admired because I couldn't place the name, but now I know where this artwork's coming from. It's Laurel Austin, lead artist of Burdens of Xiao Hao. She did all the artwork you guys saw. Began work at Blizzard a while ago and has done so much concept art, including the most recent thing being the image for the announcement of Hearthstone. You guys all know the image and therefore know the artist. Laurel, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks very much.
It's good to have you guys all here. Let's just jump right into it. We don't have a ton of time, and I know you've got a bunch of stuff to move on to, so I just want to get right in. This thing was received really well. The style that was used, Laurel's art, Doug's direction, Chris's work with story and lore, all this stuff seemed to just fit together in this beautiful thing. Here's the big question, though. It's got no, and Chris, I'll throw this to you. This has no real connection to content releases or dates for anything other than we're sort of in the thick of some of the best story that Mists has brought to us since the expansion came out. What is the idea behind this? It seemed like new stuff from Blizzard.
To put it simply, if we could have pushed this piece a little closer to the start, we would have. Ultimately, the tale was first really created by Dave Kozak, who's our lead quest designer for WoW. And Dave had really come up with a lot of the mythology of Xiao Hao and his journeys with the Monkey King. It was a much broader kind of canticle. And from the start of Pandaria, you know, Dave knew and we knew in the creative development department that we wanted to find a way to tell this tale In a little more, you know, specific way outside of just the quests and just the scrolls that are dropped in the game. And we thought, maybe is it more of a comic series? Is it more of a novella? And it was really Doug and his team, I think, really had the idea. Well, what if we told this story with moving pictures? And while we do have a film department across the street here at Blizzard, the creative dev team really wanted to try their own hand at it and do a much more kind of hand-drawn custom solution to watching this story take place. So, Doug, do you want to talk about kind of how it came together?
Yeah, well, I think everybody probably has their own version of how this project started. But for me, it was at one point, Dave Kosak, I guess, gave a speech to Team 2, right, kind of giving some of the lore background. It was recorded on video and eventually shown to us in all the different departments. And it was just pure story time. It was awesome. And he's such a natural storyteller. And we got in there and we just started watching him unfold this tale. And we're just like, man, that's awesome. So I left that meeting just thinking, I wish there was a way we could do something with that. And then just so happened, like a few weeks later, we were in a meeting with Chris and Dave and a few other key people just going, what kind of projects can we do? And I brought that up as one of the things that I thought was really cool. And at the time, I was just saying, we should just take Dave's story time and just animate that, because I thought he was just so much fun to listen to.
Wow. That must be a great way for that collaboration to sort of trickle down to you guys.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So here's a question about that. I had assumed, and I think most people are assuming this, and so this is really interesting information. It doesn't sound like the normal channels of let's get the cinematic team on this. I mean, these guys are busy. That Siege of Orgrimmar trailer is insane. The new Reaper of Souls trailer just about made me want to be 12 again. Like, all this stuff is insane, and they're doing so much amazing work that we all just assumed that this stuff was coming out of that department. Is this a real departure for you guys, Doug, to do this in this way?
Yes, absolutely. Well, especially for publishing, because this was pretty much a publishing creative dev project in cahoots with the video and post-production department that Chris actually put us in touch with early on in the process. So it's kind of an independent film that was made within this system. And it was made with a very small handful of people.
Yeah. Right. We did wind up using some cinematics resources, like, you know, editors, like Lucas was the editor of the piece. He came from the film department, and we definitely had a lot of those brothers over there kind of take a look at it and give us some pointers here and there. But it was really a new kind of product that CDEV was kind of launching out with. As you know, CDEV, you know, they've handled like the novels and the comic books and the manga and different things like that have been storytelling vehicles for us over the years. But you were kind of always looking to, like, how do we get the story out to people more? How can we leverage these ideas to an even broader audience than the 100,000 or so people that typically like to read these big novels? And so this was kind of a new product type for CDEV. And we, you know, they gave it their all, and we were kind of waiting to see, like, wow, hopefully this will work, and this can be a very viable new type of media, you know, to tell these types of stories. But obviously there's a continuity with, you know, the film group, Blizzard Film, across the street. And so I think we're always looking to, you know, how can we plus each other more down the road? How can we do more of this, you know, faster, smarter, stronger, you know,
sure.
And leverage, you know, kind of everything we've learned and all of our experience into doing things like this, hopefully more often.
Well, it definitely feels like a Blizzard cultural vibe going on where you guys are able to kind of cross over. And Laurel, were you just approached and said, hey, you're doing amazing work, this has to be you? Like, how'd you get involved in the project? What did you feel like you could bring to it?
Well, I think the way I first got involved in it was actually I was in between an illustration when I first started at CDEV, and I was just doing a sketch just to kind of fill the time when I was waiting for feedback. And I decided I would use this new brush I had, and I would paint a panda face. And so I thought, oh, panda. And then Doug, who sits in the same room as me at work, he just came by my desk to say, how are you doing? And he saw the panda I was painting, and he was just like, oh, would you be interested in doing this Xiaohao thing? And I was like, oh, you know, I've never done anything like that, but sure, that, like, it sounds fun. And it was a good way to get a start in it.
Well, it's beautiful stuff, and it definitely harkens to some of your other work. It's definitely your style. It jumps out as work you do. Were there any particular challenges here that were unique to the project?
I would say so, yeah. We learned a ton while we were working on it, absolutely. Like that you have to set up the files in a very specific way in order for the post-production people to actually make like effective use of what you're doing. Mm. And thinking about how they're going to be split up later and what parts need to move and if there's going to be a frame change. Like that's it's animation in a very minimal way, but in a very sort of like it's something I'd never really considered before.
You have to plan ahead for that, right? Because you've got layers to worry about and you're used to doing things your way. And now comes this sort of new way of arranging all that stuff, I guess.
Absolutely, yeah.
It actually brings up an interesting point. When the project started, we kind of veered away from it a little bit because it just became really, really difficult to chase. But the original conception of the project was actually a single scroll, you know, like a wall scroll. That literally the camera would move like across the scroll and tell the same, you know, the intro of Xiaohao, mm-hmm. Was actually all kind of static images on a single scroll that we were planning to reproduce to actually hang on your wall. But as we got into the subsequent chapters and the demands of the storytelling kind of required more dynamic mm-hmm. cameras and more kind of, you know, actual animated content, it became a real bear to try and maintain that continuity of having like a series of static scrolls. So, but it definitely started with a very singular vision that way. And maybe one day we'll have some kind of physical scroll, you know, to commemorate the storyline. But it started in a very interesting way and really just kind of grew into this much more filmic, much more cinematic shape.
Strikes me as similar to perhaps how some of the game projects start and then eventually turn out at Blizzard. Would you say that's uh-huh. a fair comparison?
Yeah.
The stories you could tell if you were allowed to tell them.
Man.
Can't imagine.
War 3 was originally a wall scroll. And God.
Wow. I'd love to see that one. Well, that's very interesting. And from a story perspective, when you... And Dave, obviously Dave's had a big part of this in inspiring it and bringing it to Doug, and then Doug taking it and running with it, and you sort of overseeing it and all of this sort of stuff. How important was it to tell this extra bit of story, and how important was it to maintain the thing I noticed in it, the very first thing I noticed is it was big on legend, and it seemed like it was important to this story not to be telling you something that directly related to some game mechanics or some sort of physical thing in the game world or any of that. But we're talking about the Monkey King, and we're talking about my favorite line in the whole thing.
A great gust blew the Monkey King away.
Like that kind of stuff is so a children's story that you would hear around a fire told to generations of your ancestors. And now it's up to you to now carry on this tale. Was that intentional? Was that the way you guys wanted this to come across?
It was intentional for a number of reasons. I'd love to tell you the first reason was because it's the better stylistic thing to do, and it allows the viewer, the player, to kind of chew on the content more and personalize the content a little bit more to their liking. But the practical is a little something we learned. I'm giving up all our trade secrets, but we learned it when we were doing Book of Cain, and I think we've said this publicly before. When we got into something like the Book of Cain and we're sifting through all the continuity and all the various story bits that had been developed by, you know, two different companies over, you know, three different games over the course of something like 16 years, it became really problematic to make everything make sense and to kind of cascade everything into a very cohesive order. And we wound up feeling that sometimes, like we'll just say, like, this is Deckard Cain's view of it. It's our best telling of the story, but you leave, you know, a little bit of padding such that if we come up with a story direction down the road, or we discover, or some player discovers, this is contradictory, well, at least we can say, well, that was Deckard Cain's read on it, and it leaves a little bit of margin of error. And as we began to do this, Dave had already written his scrolls for purposes of the quest process in the game, you know, the scrolls that you can find through Lorewalker Cho. And they painted the story in a very specific way that was kind of an earlier iteration. And as Dave sat down to really buff the story and expand it for a fuller, you know, a fuller telling, some of those earlier decisions became very restrictive. He's like, oh, I wish I'd have gone this way. And so the idea that, like, well, let's just tell it more as like a canticle, more of a fable, So that the specificity of data is not the value. It's the spirit of the thing that's the value. It's the lessons learned that's the truest value. It's what it feels like when you're done watching the whole thing and you look at the whole arc of Pandaria in a new way, in the purest way.
Yeah.
And that really became our highest value, that sometimes taking the legend and lore route where it could be, I guess, looked at from a number of different viewpoints, it puts the onus back on the feeling and the excitement of the idea rather than the specificity of its details.
Well, the kids don't care how Santa Claus got to the house and put the presents there. They just care that he did and that he's happy and yeah. that he's smiling and he ate your cookies and left a note. And that, yeah, totally. That feels like kind of what you guys did as a passive observer who's doesn't see the sort of behind the scenes on this stuff. That is how it feels. And that was yeah. really strong throughout. Doug, was that a priority for you as director?
What was that again?
Was it a prior? Exactly. Was it a priority for you to sort of make sure that the legend aspect of this, the wonder of it, came through more than just standard straight up lore?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, for me, and that's the thing that I loved about working on it, is it was a fable, and the whole point of it was to tell a version of the story, not the version of the story. So, Lower Walker Cho, even, who's narrating the whole thing. You know, this is a 10,000 years ago sort of thing. So it's a 10,000 year ago version of telephone, basically. So that's the fun part about it to me, is right. the fact that all the facts are going to change over time. And even better still, since he's a storyteller, he's going to give you hopefully the best version of the story that that matters to the kids that he's talking to or whatever else, you know. Lauren, in my own mind, this is him talking to his students and trying to give them a reason to understand why it's important to be a Pandaren.
Right, right. Laurel, if they came to you again, Doug walks up to you and you're sketching a dragon. And he goes, you're in again. We're doing this again. Are you up for it? Are you excited about where this could go next?
Absolutely. I would definitely love to do it again. It's such a different challenge to my normal job I'm an illustrator, so it's sort of capturing a single moment is what I normally do and trying to set it up in a way that a more complex story reads out of this. But this is just such a much bigger challenge of making sort of individual, much simpler, like emotional moments read at like within the context of a larger thing. And sort of sometimes you can't finish, like you sort of need to keep the whole context in mind rather than any individual image.
Sure.
So it's very different and fun.
Well, that's great. Sounds like a stretch and it's good to stretch. I also, I don't know if we're the only ones on the show who noticed this as we wind things down here. And Chris, I'm going to ask you this, but we've noticed something with Mists of Pandaria that didn't exist quite to the degree that it exists now. And that is a real attention to story, but not just story told within the game or in cinematics or in patches, but story told in other ways. The scrolls scattered around the world. Scenarios is arguably a game mechanic created to tell more story. More books, more comics, more stuff. And then, of course, Burdens is a great example of this. So this hasn't gone unnoticed. What I want to know is this... It has to be, so I feel like the question is almost a dumb question. But this sounds like a real track that Blizzard wants to follow in the future to push more story and keep mastering the game, keep making great video games, but push more story in and around those games in these creative ways. Can you A, confirm that, and B, any hints as to what we can expect next?
Well, for the first part, I would say, sure, that's the mission. Story is everything. Come on. Stories, it's just how we relate. It's how we emotionally imprint on everything. And I've always believed that story is critical to games. You know, even Angry Birds has a story. It's light and it's simple, but it fits the product, you know? For something like Warcraft, I always wanted it to be just a big tapestry of different stories. The trick to story is... You know, some people like a lot, some people want a little, some people just want enough to facilitate their gameplay, others want to get just lost in it, right, just in an ocean of it. And so what we're trying to do is provide as many vehicles for story as we can to suit different people's needs, right? Some people love sitting down with a good book or read one of Christy Golden's books and fall into it that way. Some people love to, be reading the Curse of the Worgen or, whatever comics we're working on. And the Xiao Hao in this form was really meant to be to cast a much broader net. You know, we're all on the internet all day. We're all looking at clips and cool things around the internet that we forward to each other or link to each other. And this was trying our hand at kind of more of a filmic take, you know, like a moving storybook. So we're just kind of experimenting and trying to, again, cast that wider net and cast this wider spell and draw people into the spirit of the thing. Plenty of people play video games because of the – it's just fun to play. It is how they relate. And, you know, the friends are on, you know, Raid and Dragons Wednesday night. And there's that part of it, which is the core of it. But, you know, for all those that kind of fall into that greater mythology and have fun with that, and it enhances their gameplay experience, then we're there for them. And we're trying to take as many people on an adventure as we possibly can. So I can indeed confirm that, yes, this is all part of the plan. and my hope is that we can do more and more of this kind of stuff over time.
Yeah.
And as for what comes next, there's people in suits just behind us.
Yeah, watch out, man.
That will exact heavy vengeance if we spill the beans.
You don't want any of that.
But there's more. There's certainly more story ahead. You know, Warcraft, it goes on and things get crazy. You know, the events of Pandaria that are coming to a climax here pretty soon, themselves have dire ramifications. You know, that set us on a whole new arc after this one concludes. So it is heating up.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited. I'm excited to see you guys all at BlizzCon. That's going to be great. Have that back this year. A lot of cool stuff happening there as always. And very excited about all the recent news we've been getting. Hearthstone's fantastic. WoW continues to stun. This new content coming with 5.4. It looks incredible. We can't wait for September. But I'm really grateful that there's this extra stuff. And you guys did amazing work on this. Chris Metzen, Doug Gregory, Laurel Austin, thank you guys so much for hanging out with me today.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Thanks very much, Scott.
This episode is sponsored in part by Shutterstock.com. You're going to find the perfect image or video for your next big creative project at Shutterstock.com. You can now choose from over 26 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, video clips, and more. They've got flexible pricing, works for anybody, any company, and any individual trying to do something cool with video, with illustration, photo project, whatever it may be. They add 10,000 images per day, so every time you visit, you're going to find something new. They give you the images you need to bring your creative project to life. Their new Spectrum tool is awesome, searchable light boxes, and so on. You can try Shutterstock.com absolutely for free today by signing up for a free account. It's real easy, no credit card needed. Just start an account and begin using Shutterstock to help imagine what your next project should be like and save favorite images to your light box to review later. Once you decide to purchase, use offer code WOW8 and new accounts will receive 30% off any package. That's Shutterstock.com. And for 30% off new accounts, use the offer code WOW8.
Big news of the week.
Big news.
All right, we're back. Thank you guys again for being with us and doing that interview. That was awesome. Big news
what
of the week.
What a fantastic interview that
Wasn't
was.
Wasn't it great, though? It was amazing.
It was so good. I mean, I was riveted the whole
time. It's as if you've heard it. It's almost as if you've heard it.
It was. It was as if, yeah.
We didn't put that in post at all.
Nah.
No.
Live, baby. Live all the time.
All transparency here on the Instance podcast since 2006. All right, check this out. Typefrag.com, by the way, sponsoring this week's Big News of the Week, which is a fantastic service that allows you and your friends to have great Ventrilo voice service, no matter how big or small your guild or your group or your raid team might be. Go check them out today at typefrag.com. 5.4, The Siege of Orgrimmar. Has a date, September 10th, 2013. Blizzard is officially advertising it as the release date for the patch.
Yep.
That's a right along kind of our prediction cycle.
Yep.
I feel like things are easier to predict on years when they have BlizzCon because you can get a sense for when they need to hurry and get something out and done before all that poop hits the fan.
Yes.
Or how much there is for after, you know?
It's like a marker in the year.
It really,
okay, this
really
has to be by then, or it's not going to work. So,
And look at it this way. I think you can also kind of predict when Blizzard might be canceling BlizzCon because, A, you know what the news cycle is going to be, but also, B, you know when they've got like two or three games to launch in 1 year, which they did last year. So there was no – when things finished up in 2011 and I was thinking about the next year. I'm like, there's no way they're doing BlizzCon. There's no freaking way. If they're really truly going to get Diablo out the door, another a whole nother expansion to WoW, StarCraft II's expansion, like there's no way any of that's going to happen if they do BlizzCon. They just don't have time. And they don't hire it out, you know, they do it themselves.
Yeah, that's the thing. If they got other people to plan this big party, they could do whatever they want, but I think they want the control.
Right.
You know, they want to know what's happening at BlizzCon, and I understand that too. So
it's like it goes back to this point. Like some have asked, why doesn't Blizzard sub out their cinematic work? Why do they have to do it all in town or in house? And that came up, you know, a couple of times in that interview with Chris and crew, and it just rings true again. Blizzard wants to control the things where they think they have the most creative impact. So why would you want to sub out your creative storytelling work if you feel like you could make a bigger impact in house? And if you saw that Diablo 3 expansion trailer, and I assume you have, that thing is insane. Like every time they make a new fully rendered cinematic, I just about crap myself. I don't know how they're getting so much. Every time it's better. Every freaking time it's better. So I for one, except the fact that Blizzard's always going to want to do certain things in-house.
Yeah.
And BlizzCon's probably the better for it, to get back to the point. You know?
Well, I mean, again, though, too, like, I went to BlizzCon in 20... I guess it was 2011.
2010, wasn't it? I don't think I saw you in
2010. Yeah, 2010. Yeah. All right. So even then, it felt like, okay, they've done this a bunch of times, and it felt a little bit like we're trying really hard to make it bigger than the year before. Like, if you have to do it every year...
Right.
Sometimes there might not be the year where this is going to be bigger than the year before, you know, but a thing like that has to be.
Yeah.
So if you take out the fact that you don't have to, then you can, you know, do it when it makes sense.
And wasn't 2010
you can actually make it big.
2010 was the Geek Is one, right? The hard, kind of the hard one. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting because I feel like they were headed for another one of those in 2012 had they had one.
Yeah. I mean, it was still fantastic. It was fun and
sure.
It was, you know, a damn good time, but, I definitely felt like there was a little bit of forcing to it, and there will not be a need to do any of that when you definitely have stuff to talk about. You definitely have things that you're ready to announce and things like that. So you don't have to have one of these every year.
No.
I'm cool with it.
With no Titan on the docket, though, it's interesting because this year will be, it'll be mostly about a WoW expansion, somewhat about the Diablo 3 expansion, somewhat about the new StarCraft expansion, but none of them... You know, Titan seemed like the
probably
hear
something about the movie. Yeah.
I'll bet we get a teaser there. You know,
we have to at this point. If they got a teaser at Comic-Con, there's got to be one at BlizzCon,
which
right?
Never freaking leaked. What the hell?
Never
is
leaked.
That?
I don't know. I don't understand. Nobody had a cell phone out. Nobody could like.
You let me down, internet.
What the crap?
I don't understand.
I always expect to get some sort of leak.
Yeah, well, like at least like some postage stamp sized, you know, like, oh, the Tron trailer in 2009 or whatever it was. This somebody leaked some tiny little postage stamp crap camera phone video, and at least they got that. There's nothing came out of that. So
nothing.
I had to predict, and I had.
And I tried. I tried hard to find it.
Yeah. Put a gun to my head. I say that's the same preview we get at BlizzCon. I'll bet you money. They just throw that up again.
Well, here's the thing. I don't understand. How they could have made a different one by now, because apparently that was like all spec shooting anyway. That wasn't like none of what they shot there. None
like
of what
proof
was
of
shown
concept
is going to be
stuff,
in the
right?
movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
They did that with
Ant-Man.
Like,
this is the look, this is the feel, but there's no actual real production. Like, you know, it's not actually a big production. It's just they're trying to show you what it's going to be like.
Yeah. I always find that really interesting. It's like that new, that J.J. Abrams thing that, with the dude that comes out of the ocean. Have you seen this? With the, what's it called?
What?
We
the dude coming out of the ocean?
Yeah, we talked about it on Comic Dorks last night. And I already forgot the name of it. I'm going to pull it up real quick. But it's it looks interesting.
Aquaman.
No. Hell no. It's probably not even him directing it. It's probably just a bad robot production and he's producing or something. But let's see. Here's the name. It is called... sorry, this is taking longer than I meant. Oh, here it is. It's called Stranger, and it's in black and white, and it looks really weird, and I'm not sure what the hell's going on there, but it's definitely worth checking out if you have a minute.
I've heard of this. I haven't looked into it.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Anyway.
Saying the mobile stream is down.
Oh, that ain't good. That's not good. Yeah. Let's find out why. Let's just double check that real fast. Oh, yeah, it is down. I don't know why.
Hmm.
That's on their end. Sadly. That is not me. Sorry, everyone. Tell your friends who are trying to use the mobile stream that it appears to be dead. Oh, now we're on the air again. So now it's up again. Okay, whatever. Hey, that's good radio right there. Let's move on.
That is good radio. I love to troubleshoot on the air.
That's the best. So
radio.
Let's talk about 5-4 and the date. Just a reminder, we're getting the Siege of Orgrimmar, a 3-wing, 14 boss raid for max players who want to take down the War Chief Garrosh Hellscream. That's coming. New raid mode, flexible rating. Pretty excited about that.
Yeah.
Proving Grounds, we've talked a ton about that on the show. Let's see. The new zone, Timeless Isle, Dills, I think it was you who went pretty far into saying you felt like that's your most excited feature or exciting feature.
Yeah, this will be cool. I'm really excited for this, definitely. Pet Battle Tournament should be a lot of fun, too. So excited for that.
Yeah, it looks really good. Sorry, my headphones popped out for a minute. You know, today's episode is brought to you by Technical Glitches.
Mm-hmm.
They don't pay very well, but it's a hell of a sponsor. Let's see. What else? Legendary Quest, The Judgment of the Black Prince.
Everybody getting the cape.
Yeah, it's all about cloaks and procs.
Different. So basically, everybody can get this cape, every class, and it has a different ability depending on whether you're DPS or a spellcaster DPS or a healer or whatnot. So
I found
everybody gets a legendary. It's like true. Oprah came along and said, hey,
check under your seat.
Stop giving legendaries to just one class at a time.
Yeah. Yeah, look under your seat. There's a cloak. By the way, saying the two words cloak proc or proc cloak real fast, like a bunch of times in a row, starts to come out real bad.
Cloak proc?
Yeah.
Cloak proc.
Keep
cloak
trying
proc.
It. Try saying proc.
No, I can already tell what's going to happen.
Proc cloak, proc cloak, proc cloak, proc cloak. Anyway, at one point I was dropping F-bombs. That's all I'm saying. Let's see what else. And then, of course, the PvP redesigned arena system. The arena thing is kicking in for reals. And if you've been playing the PTR, you know all this. But anybody new or is wondering, well, wait, what's happening in this patch again? There you go. That's the basic breakdowns. Be prepared. September 10th, 2013. The way I'm preparing is watching that in-game trailer as often as I can.
Over and over and over again, yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm trying to get in there and do a bunch of stuff that I haven't done yet to make sure that I'm caught up as far as story goes. And then they drop Hearthstone on me, and am I expected?
Killing my WoW time, killing it.
How am I expected to get through all this stuff now?
Yeah,
I mean they're removing some of the stuff, the Baron stuff, and some of that stuff is coming out because it doesn't make sense to have it still there because Vol'jin is supposed to be up there Siege in Orgrimmar, it wouldn't make sense to have him chilling out in the Barrens.
Nope.
So some of that stuff is going to be gone. So
right, they're going to change things that will never be the same. And so you better all get in there and do what you got to do. Here's the funny bit about all that, though. I do not feel prepared at all for this new stuff. Hmm. And this thing people were saying in 2011 and 2012, that when Diablo 3 comes out, we got this all the time. Do you guys think that will significantly cut into WoW player time? Do you think that'll be a thing? To some degree, yes. And I agreed with that back in the day. But also, I think Diablo is its own animal and kind of its own draw. And there are loads of people who do not like MMOs who are playing Diablo like crazy. And there are people who do not like Diablo who would never leave WoW anyway. So I don't think that was ever an issue. Those games were different enough. Hearthstone, if you want to ask me today, what is the real threat to people being in the game and spending time in WoW? I think Hearthstone is the threat.
Well, yeah, it's, to a certain extent, people who still love the world of Warcraft.
Yeah. Well, that
love
it.
They love it. Hey, they love it for the lore and the characters and the ambiance and, you know, all that stuff. They're going to feel right at home playing Hearthstone because all that stuff is there.
Yeah.
I mean, you're getting, everything is familiar and you're seeing stuff you probably haven't seen in, you know, 4 or 5 years now. There's some of the cards are named after things that you'll remember from vanilla WoW. So,
yeah. Or even Warcraft 3 for that matter. Yeah.
It's got that whole thing. You're in the WoW world. You're in the environment.
They'll even, like, an opponent will pop out like a level 2 or like, you know, just some minion with no real advantage or power. You know, it's got like 3 attack and 2 health or something.
That's a pretty good minion.
Yeah, it's not bad actually. But they'll pop that out and you'll go, oh, that's a thing I killed in Stranglethorn 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's just suddenly here and it's just here.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
It is really cool how that stuff pops up.
Yeah. And I, you know, if they didn't do that, that would have been a big mistake. And So I'm glad that they
embraced
seem to not made very many mistakes in this.
No. They've embraced it. They have just full on like said, "Yep, we are, you know, you're going to see that you're going to these are characters you know. The things they're saying you're going to know. There's going to be cards that do things and say things and behave in ways that you're going to be like, "Oh, how close, you know, how what a great memory that was in WoW or whatever."
Yeah.
It's just it oozes I'm in a tavern somewhere in, you know, one of the cities. Faction yeah. cities, and I'm hanging out playing this with my friends.
I was playing, Skyhawk the other day, and as we're playing, all of a sudden he goes, "Oh, that was Liam right there," and I'm like, "Oh, who?" And he's like, "Oh, it's when you summon a dude as a paladin," and he says like, "Reporting for duty," or something like
it's
that.
Totally
right?
him. That's, yep.
Yeah.
Everyone thinks he's just Illidan, but he did a whole bunch of like.
Yeah, he did a lot of different stuff. Yeah.
Grunt voices.
But I mean, that's all the familiar stuff, all the things you've heard before, you know, all there.
You feel at home when you play in there. And so that's my argument is that you've created much of the things that WoW appeals to people, and you put it in this battle card game, and it's very hard to get out of it. You don't want to.
It's incredibly fun, but there are some people who are not going to. I do think though that this is a different audience as far as the gameplay is concerned. So I'm not sure that some people are going to just. I think everyone's going to go off and play it for a little while, but I think that there's a certain type of person who's going to stick with this for the long haul.
Right.
I think a lot of people will come over, play it, and then what will happen too is some people who aren't playing WoW will play this and then go, "Oh man, I miss WoW. Mm-hmm. I miss all of these things." And then bang, they'll go. Play some WoW. They'll resub.
And then they'll come back. They'll come back because they'll hear, for $1.50 or in this new free expansion or whatever, this free patch they put out, I can be Lore Walker Cho as one of the new heroes. Sweet. Mm-hmm. You know, or whatever. Like if there's going to be these two things are going to be able to draw on each other forever. And finally, Blizzard has a thing, you know, long considered the real time RPG/strategy company. They were ones that broke away from turn-based to say, look, well, what if we do this all and everything we do is real time. Diablo is essentially a dungeon crawl based on old roguelikes that were turn-based games. Well, what if that's just real time? Great, Diablo series, there you go. What if all our strategy games are not turn-based? They are straight up real time. Here they are now going back to a turn-based, very strategic game.
Yeah,
and I think those are in vogue again anyway, so it's perfect timing. And it also card battle games are very popular right now, so it's really positioned itself in a nice way. And honestly, it has eliminated all interest I have in other competing systems, be it Magic or anybody else, except Hex, because I have really high hopes for Hex from Cryptozoic. And again, those guys come from that same Protozoic. Not to use a bad word in terms of Cryptozoic, but you know they come from the same primordial ooze as Blizzard people do.
Sure.
And so I have really high hopes for that thing when that gets released, and this is maybe just going to wet my whistle for more. But beyond that, though, like Order and Chaos, their thing, whatever it was called, Soulforge, there's a couple others, and of course Magic. Those have all I have zero interest in playing those games after playing this.
Well, I loved the Magic. App version, the iPad app version of that game.
Right.
I loved it. It was great. It was fantastic. But I'll say this, after I played the crap out of it, I think it was actually Nerdtacular last year on the way home. We drove back from Utah and I played Magic like the entire time home.
Wow.
But on
your iPad?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. But that game I haven't opened in months now, and then you know this game and this game feels totally fresh and different, you know, than that did. So
well, let's talk about that. You said before the show just briefly that you felt like one of the strengths of the game was that it did away with some of the things you didn't like about traditional TCGs. What is that?
Well, I don't know. Everything I'm going to say, probably some people who are really into TCGs are going to go, well, that's been done by this game, and that's been done by this game.
We are no experts in this. Absolutely.
I don't know that. I know Magic, and I know this, pretty much. That's kind of it. Right. But one thing is the fact that in Magic, if you can't kill a card in a single turn, then it's full health again on the next turn. Mm. I don't like that. And in here, you can chip away at something. So if someone throws out a big, massive card, and I have no way to kill it right now, I can still decide whether it's advantageous or not for me to take it down 4 health or whatever. You right, know, so whatever I can
let's
do.
Say I throw down, you're opposing me, and I throw down a level 5. I call them levels just because it's the mana cost. So let's say I throw down a mana cost of 5 of a core hound.
5 drop.
And let's say he's 6/6. 6 damage, 6 health, which is already mm-hmm. pretty massive. And I've also got 2 buff cards, and I buff him, so now he's 8/7.
Sure.
So let's say I've laid that down. This game would not work if it had, at the end of every round you chipped away 4 health on him and he went back up.
8/7. Yeah, that just and that's what happens in Magic is if you can't kill that card, then there's no point in doing anything to it. Yeah. You know, you got to figure some other way around it. And it makes sense when you have, you know, live cards sitting in front of you because otherwise you're going to be constantly writing everything down. Like, oh, by the way, this guy has taken 4 damage. So even though it says right here that he's a 7/7, he's actually a 7/3 right now. Like, that's just, there's so much to keep track of.
Sure.
It makes sense to me that they don't do that. So I get it.
You have an advantage in a game to do that.
Yeah. And you can't track that when you're playing live card
games. They're at a disadvantage because they've got 2 fronts to maintain. This is one thing Blizzard mm-hmm. did. They said, we're not going to make a, you know, and for people who don't know this, it's absolutely true that Hearthstone is not the WoW TCG as it stands today. There are different rules, there's some similarities, but for the most part, it's very different rules and the way things work are very different. And I have not played any meaningful WoW TCG to even give the comparisons, but I just know this from being told.
Some of the stuff is there. So basically, some stuff that's in WoW TCG is not actually now in Hearthstone, but a lot of the mechanics are there.
Right.
So in a lot of ways, they're similar, but again, it's that same type of thing. It's a live game. It's a live card game. You can't do things like this. The fact that this is a video game, everything is tracked for you, that makes things possible like this. So I really like that. The ability to have other things like hero powers and weapons and all that kind of stuff, that adds like a really big new little tweak that I really like.
Yeah.
So I'm totally into that.
Yeah, it's cool. And what's great is those tweaks and this keeping track of everyone's hit points and all these things that would be a nightmare on paper are mm-hmm. simple in a video game. The video game keeps track of it. You don't have to worry about it.
Yep.
So it affords them this. This is one thing I really like about the game. Blizzard has seen areas where the necessities of a table with cards on it don't have to just, you know, you don't have to assume, well, those are crucial to the experience. So let's make sure we carry those over. They've said, well, no, some of that stuff's a pain. So we don't want that over here. Instead, what we want over here are things that you could never do there. And for me, it's a huge part of why Hearthstone's singing its song to me and I'm following its muse mm-hmm. is the presentation is frickin' amazing. The sound effects, the sort of explosive graphics when something really cool happens. Everything is really, really heavily animated. Satisfying. Even when you open a deck of cards, you feel like it's freaking Christmas every day. I spent $50.
Sparkles and shines and does everything. Like, it's very satisfying.
It very much so. And I spent $50 on video. It's up on Frogpants or the Frogpants TV feed. If anyone wants to see it, we may put it on the blog as well. But I went and bought $50 worth of cards. That's 40 stacks, 40 decks, and I opened them one by one. It's a chunk of money, and I did it purely out of it. It carries over after the beta, which is nice, but. The cards don't, but the money does. So I can spend
the cards don't, but you'll get like basically $50 with a credit. So you'll be able to open 40 more packs.
I can just buy, which I'll do the minute I get in there. I only have one concern about that because when I did it, the math worked out pretty much what you'd expect. A whole bunch of common cards, a couple common cards with gold foil, which are really just cosmetic.
They're the same. It's really just like a collector type of thing to have.
It's cool because those actually they disenchant for more.
Yeah.
Things like that. So you can actually, there's an advantage to that, but really it's just cosmetic when you're playing them. But anyway, I got a handful of those and a whole bunch of commons, and then I got a pretty good stack of rares, blues, and those blues are great and, you know, whatever. There's some class, some non-class specific stuff. Then I got a much smaller, but again, a pretty decent set of epics. They're all purple and probably got, I don't know, out of 40 decks, how many cards is that even? 40 times 5, whatever it is. The portion of those seemed about right, and it's a good number. Mm-hmm. One legendary is all. But again, that feels right. Like, you don't want legendaries to be coughing up every 5 minutes.
One legendary, you shouldn't be getting multiple. I mean, I opened 20 packs, or 15 packs.
Yeah.
And I got no legendaries.
Right.
But I got, like, 4 or 5 epics, I think. Which is pretty decent, I think.
That seems about right. That's actually pretty good.
And a
That's
lot of rare. I mean, you're basically guaranteed in every pack to get at least one rare.
Yeah.
So and I've also earned maybe 5 or 6 packs other than those 15 that I opened. Mm-hmm. So all in all, I've opened about 20 something packs.
Yeah.
And I've got some cards, you know, some decent stuff. I have been DEing stuff though. Like when I first started out, I was like, I'm not going to be able to build 9 decks of good stuff for all of these different, classes. So I'm going to concentrate on the hunter.
Right.
And so I started DEing everything that wasn't a hunter card so I could then create some good hunter cards. Then I started playing the game more, and now I'm realizing shaman is actually the way to go for me anyway.
Do you feel so? Let's talk about that real quick. How are you feeling about some people are crying OP on the priest and the Anduin character?
The priest has some pretty big secrets. I mean, you can, for one mana, you can copy a minion out of the or a card out of the other guy's deck.
Yeah.
And that's pretty hard. You can get pretty lucky there. I did that the other day and got 2 Deathwings.
Oh, jeez.
Which actually, Deathwing, you can't even use 2 of because the way that card works is once you play it, it annihilates your hand.
Yeah, devastates your own hand. You better be smart about it.
You throw Deathwing down and then you lose the rest of your cards. So it's great to play when you only have a couple other cards, but
yeah.
I would have lost the second Deathwing. I couldn't have even played the second Deathwing.
Yeah.
Important
to note, too, when that happens, it's not just poof, your cards disappear. It's like the biggest fiery mess.
Yeah.
I love it. I love that.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. But they also have the ability to double a minion's health.
Yeah.
And you can get 2 of those cards. So think about how you, I mean, I got one of my guys up to, I think, 32 health or something.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was just like, yeah, what's up now? And then, of course, the shaman immediately hexed him and turned him into a 0/1 frog. So,
right.
Yeah.
The mage, I've been able to use the mage's polymorph pretty smartly when things like that have gone down. Oh man, they're just talking about this makes me want to freaking play it.
I know. I want to play it. We should play it right after we're done.
We should. We absolutely should. You have some time before work?
Sure.
All right.
Sure.
Here's how we're going to do this, guys. We're going to celebrate today's fantastic episode by immediately starting a live stream after this and we'll play.
Mm-hmm.
I think that'd be fun. So I, back to the, what was my point? I had a point. I was trying to get to that you, oh, all right. So I bought all those cards. I got the one legendary. It's a Karen Bloodhoof card. And I couldn't even tell you what.
Druid.
Yeah.
Druid legendary. Yeah.
Well, I think, yes, it is a druid legendary, right?
Yeah. So I think you have to be a druid to play that card.
Okay. It wasn't common to everybody. I'll have to remind myself. But I haven't actually gone and built my decks much since I got all that because I've just been too busy. But my goal is to go in there and tweak stuff out. So here's the question for you. You've had a pretty good winning streak. For those who are in the beta and maybe are struggling or having a hard time winning, and for those who are curious how this works, what have you found to be your best strategy? Somebody at Blizzard said to me, hey, when you start a deck, or when you start the game, rather, and you get your random draws, right, and you can choose if you want to put some back and exchange them for other random draws, always put away the bigger mana cards. And keep as many 1s and 2s and a 3 if you have to as you can. Start out with the low numbers, no matter how poopy the card may be. Start with those low numbers because then you can get good minions out sooner, faster, get more taunt out there, and that's this
kind
of stuff.
Yeah, there's a little bit more to that, though. Like, I think definitely if you get your first 3 cards and you have 2 7s and a 6.
Yep.
You need to just chuck those because you're not going to be able to do anything for a long time. The opponent's going to get big board control over you, and you'll be screwed before you know it.
Put all 3 back.
Here's where it gets a little tricky, though. There's certain cards that, like, 5 turns is not that far away, honestly. So if I get like a 5 or something, then I will keep that if that's a card that I know is going to be really valuable once I get to turn 5.
Yeah.
If I know that card can swing the game in my favor once I get there, then I'm holding on to that bad boy.
Mm.
And then there's also cards, too, that look great on paper. And then when you actually start playing, you realize this card does not actually come into play very often. So you got to kind of figure those things out and tweak your deck as you're going. Get rid of some of these things that aren't actually coming into play very often. Like, I have a lot of cards. I'm like, man, this would be so fantastic if the situation would come up where I could use this damn thing.
Yeah.
Situation never comes up, can't ever use it. It's just, you know. So even though it might look great, like I had this one card, it was a 0/7, and basically it would wipe the entire board. But the problem is it doesn't wipe the board until the beginning of my next turn. So I have to throw it down, on a board where the other guy has a huge advantage, and then it has to survive to the beginning of my next turn. And that's not going to happen very often because it doesn't make sense. It wipes all the board, my board, his board, everything.
Everybody, yeah.
So that doesn't make sense if I can't play it and keep it alive, which is the only situation where I would play it to try to wipe the board, right?
Right.
Yeah. So there's things like that. You got to like kind of figure that kind
of
stuff out.
So the guys that throw the barrels full of explosives. I don't remember the name of the card, but I have it in my deck, and they're called unreliable something somethings. But anyway, the idea is you throw these guys out, and they will randomly huck their burning barrels at a random opponent or you. So you have
that's like the bomb dude or whatever. But there's the demolisher, which will always hit the opponent.
Right. No, I got that, and there's a bunch of others that are always going to straight up. Like I've got the mage has flame strike or something that will just. Only hit opponents or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So there's plenty that do that. But the ones that are random, I like keeping those in the deck because there have been times where that thing has saved me and I've won.
Sure.
There have been other times where it killed me and I lost. So
those cards are a little bit, you know, I mean, they're hit and miss. And until you have much better cards that you can replace these with, it's not a bad idea to hold on to those. Right. Plus, you can also use the random mechanic. Can definitely be used in your favor if you make sure you play it in the right situation where you don't have a lot of stuff for it to choose from.
Right.
The other dude's got like five cards out and you've got two. I mean, you can really get something going with that there.
Sure. So it's interesting because you got to build 30 cards out of a set of whatever you've got.
Yeah.
And like, I'm sure this is since I'm new-ish to TCGs, this is an old problem and this sounds dumb to even talk about. But coming up with your best ultimate deck is really hard, and there are deck builders out there already in Hearthpwn, which is basically, you know, Wowhead for this, has a deck builder. It's, I don't know where to even start, though. People are like, oh, yeah, the best deck is this. Next guy I talked to, oh, no, wait, hold on to your sevens, because you're going to need those later. Well, wait, the other guy said to hold on to your ones and twos.
But you need a good mix is what I've found. You need a good mix of minions, and you need minions that do something. You need synergy within your deck. What you want is you want things that will help each other, things that buff each other, things that will, taunts are really huge. Having minions with taunt is massive because you put those out and you control the board, you control the action. They have to take care of those guys before they can take care of your other guys, so it basically gives protection to, say the pint-sized summoner is a fantastic card. It's a 2 mana, and it's a 2/2 card. And what it does is every turn, the first guy you put out costs 2 less mana.
Right.
So as soon as I throw this guy out, if I get him to last till the next turn, then suddenly I've got cheap, big cards I can chuck out there. So all of that stuff, you really have to make sure that you're building a deck where you've got like a ramp up in that deck. And you can actually start small, have control early. Mid game, you start to actually kind of move the game into your favor. And then late game is just crush them. Get the big guards out there, crush them. That's kind of the deal.
Yeah.
Also, a lot of people don't really handle the beginning game very well. They tend to throw, like, especially if you go second, they use the coin on the first turn.
Yeah.
To get a 2/2 out or whatever. And it's a wasted coin. The coin. The coin card.
Right.
When you go second, right?
Right.
And actually, I think going second is much better in this game. Mm-hmm. You get to react to what the opponent's doing. You get an extra mana whenever you want it, and you also get an extra card.
Yeah, so, it feels like they did that on purpose because there is an advantage to starting first in some ways, but this is
mana than the other guy kind of the whole time, right? A little bit, think about it.
Yeah.
But it's to me, I'd much rather go second. I'd rather have that coin. That coin is super powerful. You can play that. At any time, and I hold on to that thing usually until the third or fourth turn, and then I'm popping it out so I can get a big card out, or I can get 2 cards that work together, something like that. You know, one mana can be a huge difference in a turn.
Right.
So don't use that thing right away. No. I see tons of people using that thing right away. It's just not a good idea.
Yeah, almost everyone I play does. Like immediately they play it, and I don't know what that. I mean, somebody somewhere probably thinks that's the way to go, and this is the problem of the game like this. There really are a lot of ways to go. That seems dumb to me and you, but maybe someone else has figured out a way to have a lot of wins based on them playing that coin all, early.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, you know, I think there are situations where you should. I just think that most of the time, it's really going to be more valuable to you later on.
What do you use for the? What do you do with the mana ring? Do you hang on to that until the late game, or do you throw it out early, or what do you do?
The mana ring?
Yeah, the little ring.
I don't know. Which, I don't know.
I think you think it's a coin, no, and I think it's a ring.
The card is called the coin.
Is it?
Yeah.
But there's one. But what about the mana ring that gives you an extra thing of mana? That's definitely a ring.
No, it's called the coin.
What?
There's no ring.
There is no ring? Are you sure it's not a ring?
No, it's a coin.
Wait, hold on. Mana, coin, card, Hearthstone. You're probably right. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. It's got to be the same thing, right?
Yeah.
That I'm thinking
called,
of?
The card is literally called the coin.
Okay. And people are calling it, like, there are multiple forum posts saying the coin is the most OP card in the game.
Yes.
Yes. Do you agree with that? I think the wisp is pretty badass.
It's free, yeah, and it's very powerful. I think very much this could be considered. Now, if you're a druid, you can innervate and give yourself 2 mana.
Yeah.
And that costs you 0. So druids already kind of have something that's even more powerful in their deck. And I've seen, I can't remember who it was. Somebody was playing this and they had 3 innervates in their hand. This was all arena, so you can get like more than 2
yeah.
of a card. They had like 3 innervates in their hand. They had like 3 of those, the treants, the protectors.
Right.
And they were just unstoppable. I mean, you could not mess with these guys because he could chuck out 3 innervates in a turn and suddenly have 6 mana. And, you know, I mean, it was nuts. Ugh. So
that feels OP to me.
It's so if you think about a druid on the first turn with in a regular deck could have a coin and 2 innervates and he could play a six.
That's crazy.
On the very first turn of the game.
Yeah, that's crazy to me. That feels like that's going to get tweaked.
Yeah. Well, so I get the reason for the coin being in there. So the coin, gain 1 mana crystal this turn only.
Yeah.
I see why you think it's a ring. It looks like a ring.
Maybe that's, I haven't been reading it. I just know what it does and I keep looking at it. I think it's a ring every time.
Sure. Yeah.
I think it says, I think my brain thinks it says the ring when it really says the coin.
The coin. Yeah.
What the hell's wrong with me?
But I get why they put it in there because they want to even up the advantage of going first. But I think they went a little too far. I think it's a little too far.
By the way, the Wisp is something I've seen people clean the floor with me. That's 0 mana, 1 and 1.
It's a 1/1. It's good for early on, but to me, it's I don't like it. It's takes up a card in my deck. I only have 30 cards in my deck, and it takes up a card in my deck for a 1/1 that does nothing else.
The problem is I've seen a couple of fights go down to the wire where we're really just hanging on by 1 or 2 points. Whoever makes the next move is going to either win or lose, right? And this thing will be the way they do it because they're out of mana. I've got 1 health point left, and they play the Wisp. And that seems like a card you'd want to not play early. Well, at least if I was playing it. And it's never been dealt me. I have it in my deck, but it doesn't get. I've have yet to have it dealt.
Yeah.
But I would hold on to it until I need it, or late game where I felt like I could make 1 final chip away at somebody, or I could throw down, and then immediately throw something else down that would cost mana, but would buff this thing 2 and 2 or something.
Yeah.
Like there's,
see, my games haven't quite been like that. My games have been like, he's got 30 health and I've got 10 and then I bloodlust and do, you know, 40 damage in one turn and he's gone.
Lord.
Like that's the type of stuff that I've been getting. It's like these really long kind of setting up the thing. And then all of a sudden, boom, you just hammer him and he's done.
So what level are you? I mean, all your characters are roughly the same level. Have you been grinding that out a little bit?
I got every single class to level 10.
Yeah.
Cause I just felt like I wanted to get all of the basic cards and just kind of wanted to play them all enough that, you know, and I did them all with custom decks. I didn't do the basic decks. I went to the deck builder and if I didn't know a lot about the deck or the class, I just did the suggest a card thing, which is actually really cool.
Right.
So suggest a card is almost like doing a mini arena because it'll give you 3 choices and you select from one of those 3 choices. And then it goes, okay, you've got all your class specific cards. Now let's get some 2 drops. Now let's get some 3 drops. Now let's get some big cards. Now let's give you some more stuff that'll just kind of finish off your deck. So they do a really good job of kind of helping you, like walking you through the process of building a deck.
Yeah.
So I did that with a few different classes, and I got them all to 10, but the Hunter and the Shaman are like...
It's kind of where you're rolling.
Yeah, I think the shaman is like level 17 or 18, yeah, and the hunter is like level 16 or something. So
I'm really digging on the mage, and I thought I wouldn't, because to me, I don't know if this is something to complain about or something that just says something about the way I have expectations for games, but the mage is your starting thing. That's kind of your tutorial in the game.
Yeah, that's the first class they give you.
And normally when you do that in a game, you get at least your head makes up this idea that this is the wimpy class, that because they're using it for tutorial, there's no way this thing's going to be great
this
later
is
on.
The human warrior of, yeah, it's you know, to me, that's what it made it feel like.
It did, even if it's not true. Like, if you'd have swapped out, if you'd have put Hunter in there, then we would all felt that way about Rexxar. I mean, that's
not me. I would have been like, hell yeah, finally, it gets it.
The Hunter thing is different for you, but you know what I mean? Like, if any of these guys would have been the guy to start with, we would have had this artificial notion that they're therefore not fun to play. But I really, really enjoy the mage at 16 or 17. It's really fun.
I see a lot of mages doing really well, and there's a certain classes the mage does really well against too.
Yeah.
But yeah, what I'm seeing most of now is I'm seeing paladins, priests, and warlocks. That's what I'm seeing the most of.
Priests are bastards. Every time I play a priest, I get my clock cleaned. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah. There. See, it's funny because like I see all these classes, and then I'm playing shaman, and I'm just like, I don't know. There's so much potential with the shaman, with some of these things. Like, I've got this lightning shock. I can do a bunch of damage to everybody. I've got bloodlust where I can give everybody +3 attack on my board in one turn, and I can just go to town on people.
Mm-hmm.
I've got the ability to give them a weapon, so I can give them that. And then I can, like, you know, put down these flame tongue totems that give +2 to the guy on either side. I mean, I can do all these things to buff my attack so much in one turn,
mm-hmm,
that I'm just kicking people's asses all of a sudden. It's like they think they've got everything under control. They think they've got me down. I'm at like 8 health and they're at full health, and then boom, that's it. Game over. So that's kind of how I was doing it last night. I mean, you can really feel in this game that the control is not the thing early. The control is the thing mid to late. Like, if you can come back so much in this game. I've had people come back on me. I thought for sure I had them, and then bam, I'm dead.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I did that 3 or 4 times last night. So I streamed the entire arena run, so people can go check that out if they want to. I'll put the video up and stuff.
Mm.
But I was, yeah.
Those Twitch keeps them on your account, I think.
Hanging out, it was nice.
Yeah. I was playing Scott Kurtz the other night, and he beat me the first game pretty handily. Very next game, some luck of the draw going on, I could tell. I had gotten some really great cards early, and he'd gotten some real poo for a while. But it came down to the wire where I think it was like, 6. He was down to 6. I was down to 4. The other way around. He was down to 4. I was down to 6. And if I would have let him have another turn, I was dead. His minions were set. I had no more taunt out there. He was going to take me down. But I just totally luckily got a draw for Firebolt.
Fireball.
Fireball will do 6 damage. Did exactly the amount of damage I needed. And took him out, and had not gotten that card, I'd have been dead. I didn't have enough to play. I had maybe 2 cards. They were all crap. He had taunt out there like I was going to be dead. So, which brings me to one other point, and we don't want to get too mathy for everybody because, you know, again, the instance isn't really about that sort of thing. But the most important tactic that I seem to be able to harness for my wins is smart use of taunt. And taunt is key for me.
Yeah. You must have, like, 5 or so guys with taunt in your deck. Yeah. You have to.
Yeah. Fill that up. If you got extra slots in the 3, 4, and 5 mana slots, and
you need taunt early, and then you need it late, though, too.
Yeah. I would take it over attack and health any day.
Yeah. You want to sprinkle it in there in the right times. But the thing is, these guys who do have taunt, they're going to be lacking somewhere else. Anytime you see a card and it has a special ability, it's not going to be as powerful as far as the numbers are, the stats, as a card with none of those things.
Right.
However, I have 0 cards in my deck, I think, that have no special abilities. I just don't. I'd much rather have the abilities than the extra stats. Because you can turn those abilities into extra stats. So
that's true. And I think that's true of me, too, except I have some low-level stuff they're sort of fodder to get out there and attack early. But
yeah,
other than that, the higher, like 3 up till 7s, I don't think I've got anything that's
Yeah, and you shouldn't. You should.
Trying to think. Yeah, I don't think I've got anything that's bigger than that.
I'm sure there's reasons to have these things because you can use other guys to buff them, and you can make them really powerful. But to me, it's kind of like a wasted card almost.
So. Well, to kind of sum things up, if that's even possible, it's really, really good. By the way, congrats to those who won Hearthstone keys from us. We were able to give some away during the week as well. That was awesome. We're hoping to get more, and if we do, we'll definitely have some more contests and get you guys going. But it's really good. I think they have a giant hit on their hands. I don't think there is any question about that after actually getting to play it. This isn't just this isn't just lip service or fan service for WoW heads and people.
No, if I didn't like this game, I wouldn't be playing it constantly. I mean, that's the thing. This game is one of those games I step away from it and I'm immediately going, oh, I want to play right now.
I want to get back. Man, the tablet version is going to be insane. There's so much to get excited about. And it's, as always, Blizzard's betas feel like polished year-old releases from other developers. And it feels done. There's some tweaking, clearly, but it's...
Yeah, well, there's some bugs and stuff. There's been a couple of times where I've done a couple of, like, combos, and it didn't actually do what it said it would do. Mm. So I think these are the types of things, like, that they want us to be reporting. So I should be reporting that.
I've seen some tooltip glitches, and I did report some.
Yeah.
But they usually will go away with a... backing out into another menu or alt tabbing or something. So there's little stuff here and there, but really therein, this game's nearly finished. We're just balancing right now.
What do you think? Where do you think there could be improvements though? Like, are there things that you've been playing the game? And you're like, oh, I wish it was like this.
That's a really good question. I think the chat system's a little gangly.
Yeah.
Talking to your opponent is a little goofy, so there's some interface stuff there. I think the deck building interface, and this is a hard problem, so this is not me criticizing, because I can't imagine the UI concerns that this causes, but deck building is kind of confusing and kind of a pain.
Well, there's a couple of things in that I think are missing. One is, I think they should tell you how many spells and how many minions you have.
Yeah.
Because right now, you can see how many of certain number drops you have. So I can see, I'm full up on twos. I have way too many twos.
Yeah.
But you can't at a glance just know, okay, I have 17 minions, which I think is important. I think you need to know that number. Or how many things with taunt do I have? How many buffing things do I, you know what I mean? Like that type of stuff. I would like to see those stats somewhere on the side as well.
Maybe better filters just to make sense of it.
How many cards with enrage? How many cards with taunt? How many, you know what I mean?
It's a real problem for me because I just opened up 40 packs of cards and now it's just a giant pile of psycho.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
There's a reason I haven't rebuilt my deck yet because I'm kind of intimidated to go in there and go, oh my gosh, all this stuff. Where's this? Well, yeah, I have that card. Well, let me just throw away the ones I just spent 20 minutes agonizing over whether I should use or not because I just forgot this other one was in there. Like, there's a lot of that going on. And again, it's a challenge. I understand.
Once you get to 30 cards and you've got a fairly decent deck, then you get a really good card. It's so hard to figure out what to take out to put this guy in.
No,
it's really difficult because all those cards have now helped you win, at some point.
Right.
You're going, oh no, I got to choose one of these damn things to get rid of. It's like, it's agonizing for sure.
And I can't imagine. So at some point I'm going to want to make multiple decks for multiple classes and it's just going to get, it's going to get gnarly. So ways to help do that. The way the arena works, I think is really cool.
Yes. I do think that's a really fantastic thing. I'm a little bit, I don't know if I'm a big fan of the 150 gold price. But I get it.
Right.
You kind of got to gate that. Otherwise, people are just going to be constantly in there, and they're going to be earning tons and tons of cards really easily.
Yeah.
When I last night played and got 8 wins in the arena, which is 1 away from the most you can get, if you can do that, if you can get, I think it's 7 wins, you're basically paying for your own arena because you get higher chances to get gold and dust and all that stuff in packs. So it's that's the way to kind of break even. If you're only winning 1 or 2, you're actually, I think, getting more value out of paying 100 gold just for a new pack.
Yeah.
It depends. I still think though, arena just for the play time, for the fun of playing it, is worth the extra 50 gold, even if you don't do well.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's one of those things that if people really get hooked on arena, this is where they're going to justify spending actual money on this thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Blizzard's going to make a fortune on this game.
Oh, there's no question about it. There are people like me who are just ready to throw down the 50. And I, the way I justified it was like, well, guess I'm not playing Saints Row 4. I'll just that's just a game I'm not going to get. I'll just do this.
To me, I felt like $20 was about right to spend. I spent $20. I got 15 decks. And I recommend if people are going to spend money, if they think this is a game where they'll spend some money, to me, the game is definitely worth $20. But if you're going to spend some money, spend it right away because the cards you get are going to make playing the game later easier on you, less work. You're going to do better. It's going to help you earn more decks in the future.
And like a real TCG, it might be enough. Like you serve people to go to these things on a Saturday at a comic book shop and they've only ever spent, money on, I don't know, 10 additional packs or something. And they're fine. They're competing. They're having a good time. Like this is enough to play this game and have a really great time.
No, I think so. I mean, you could spend nothing and you could do fine. I mean, it's a matter of playing well and making smart decisions with your deck. Yeah. But I would say the other thing I would like to see in this game is when you're doing one-on-one, I would like to see some sort of information about the person I'm playing. Like I would love a win-loss record or something, or like what, because you get these medals, right? You move up, your gold, one star, and stuff like that.
And you have your challenges or quests or whatever they are, yeah.
Yeah, so I'd like to see where they are there. The other thing is I would like to see some more game modes rather than just one-on-one race to killing the guy. I'd like to see some other stuff.
Yeah.
Magic has that planes thing where, the whole board changes based on what the plane card is and stuff like
that. Right.
That kind of stuff is cool.
I suspect a lot of that stuff's being held for expansions whatever.
They got to make some changes down the road, and they will. And and the other thing is there's no Death Knight or Monk right now.
Yeah.
So really looking forward to those two decks.
Yeah, I guarantee that's coming.
Death Knight, oh man, that's going to be awesome.
If I had a wish, we're talking about things we'd like to fix. If I had a wish list, near the top of that would be expand this either as a add-on to what's already here. I don't know if it needs to be a whole separate game. Probably not. But add on to this thing a StarCraft edition.
Oh, hell yeah.
I would play the hell out of that. Oh, my
and Diablo, why not? Just put them all in the same universe.
Or, even that would be fine.
StarCraft deck, like this is going to, Zerg deck, uh-oh.
Yep.
That kind of stuff.
Coming in with a 10-10 level 7 carrier full of interceptors. What are you going to do about that? What I'm saying is Blizzard's other properties are prime for this.
Totally.
That would be, so if I have a wish list about the future, it would be, let's see some of that stuff integrated in there. I would be beyond thrilled. Back when we interviewed those guys, the devs on this particular team, I asked that question and they said, well, we're not really talking about the, so they've been quiet about it, but they never said no. So I got high hopes, man. I have high hopes.
I don't see how this is not going to happen. I mean, you got to have a Queen of Blades, a Kerrigan deck. You got to have a Jim Raynor deck. Like, that stuff is coming. You know it.
Dude, I don't know. I know it has to be. I mean, I don't know why that makes me so excited. I love the sci-fi stuff as much as I do fantasy, and sometimes I like it even more. And I wish that StarCraft had expanded in the way that Warcraft had into these other areas, MMOs, and so on. In this particular case, me getting a hold of a Zeratul deck just gives me warm, funny feelings in my loins.
Exactly. It would be so good. Yeah, and then Diablo, I mean, you've got your own cast of characters there, too. So Deckard Cain, you got a Haradra Cube card in there somewhere. Be awesome.
Beyond excited. So, again, and Terpster's had some playtime. We'll get his feelings next week a little bit about what's going on his end of the pond. But I really, really like it. And Dills, when I started playing it, I got to tell you, one of my first thoughts was, oh, shit, Dills is going to dominate everybody. This is so up your alley.
I'm doing okay.
It's
I
so
like
you, though, dude. It's
all
like,
about strategy.
Yeah, it's like billiards or anything else. Like any of these things. Let me tell you how you get Dills. Here's the carrot you put on your stick. You just make an experience like this where the strategy element is clear and kind of present in everything about it, and you've got him. Like,
well, I really like games where I can just beat somebody. Right. There's something about that. Like, that's the thing. Like, pool, that's why I like PvP. I like it when I'm just like, I did it better than you did, and now I'm winning.
Yep.
So, I don't know. There's, it's My family's really competitive, so I probably got it. My grandfather, when I was a little kid, he did not play board games against us where he would let the kids win. He destroyed us at every single game he played. My little tiny 4-year-old brain couldn't comprehend the strategy of Risk. And he was a commander in the Navy. So he was like, okay, let me show you what's up, kid. And he just, he'd be attacking me from all sides. He's got all of Asia. And I'm just like, what is going on, Grandpa?
Not messing around.
That's great. So that's kind of where I got it from. And yeah, I'm going to be the same way when I have kids and stuff. Like, oh no, I'm not going to let you win in checkers.
You got to prepare these kids for the world, man. You got to get them ready.
Exactly. No one's going to let you win out there. I'm gonna show you how it works.
I have one goal between now and the end of time, and that is somehow, somewhere, I want to illustrate a card. It can be a dumb minion. It can cost one mana. It doesn't have to have special powers. I just got to get with somebody. Somebody at Blizzard's got to say, yeah, you know what? We need a goofy card. It needs to be GURP. And it's standing in the fire, and it kills you kill yourself. You sacrifice yourself, and it'll cause one damage to somebody else. That's totally fine with me. But I want to do that so bad I can taste it more than any other thing.
They should have little cards that like just don't do anything. Like it's like kind of just for fun, and like you just use it when, you know. So it's like you throw it out there and it's a zero mana cost, and it comes out and he just immediately dies in the fire.
Yeah. The only downside is you've got, you know, your deck is only 30, and so what? You took up one spot with a funny card, but you're good enough. You don't care, you know. Like,
yeah, no, that could be pretty funny. Even just to collect the card, you know, would be fine.
I just want to put my card in there so bad.
Ugh. Here's my one hope, Blizzard. Replace Rexxar with Dills. So when when you play the Hunter, you play Dills.
That's funny.
That's what I want. You know, I think though there is some room here where they could have two characters for each class.
Yeah.
So rather than every time I play the Hunter, it's Rexxar. I mean, I could play one or the other, and then each one would have a different hero power or something like that.
Oh, yeah, you know, that's not bad.
You'd have two different hero powers per class, and you could decide which one you liked better. So,
well, you know, I don't play the ladies in WoW, and I'd really love it if my mage wasn't a lady. I got nothing wrong with the ladies. Don't get me wrong. The way I play video games, it's just always a dude. So I would, you know, as much as I'm enjoying the mage, there are times I'm like, I wish you were high mage Flim Flam or some other guy. You know, I don't know who. I can't think of one right now. Famous mage.
Yeah, high mage Flim Flam.
Who's a famous mage in WoW? I can't think of one.
You saw him in Dalaran with all the other.
Right. That bastard. Okay. Well, there you go. We're going to take another break for another big chunk of interview time here. This is going to be, again, Terpster was at Gamescom all week. And sat down with Tom Chilton and Corey Stockton talking about WoW, the state of things, the future of things. We'll let him take that away when we come back. We'll get to your town crier, your questions, your emails, and more. Hang in there.
Patch 5.4.
So 5.4, we're going to finally kill Garrosh. It's been a long road to get there. How have you guys feel like the development of Garrosh has happened over Missy? Do you think that he's a bad enough guy now?
Yeah, I'm pretty satisfied with how bad he is. We set out with Mr. Pandaria to try to really set him up as the bad guy and try to make sure that it would feel to at least the majority of our players that maybe don't have their heads under the sand or something like that, that he actually has done terrible things and needs to be deposed. So pretty happy with how that's played out.
Yeah, I think we realized after the Lich King that we needed to make sure that we had, you know, a boss at the end of the expansion that felt like it was worth killing, like Tom mentioned, that players would know about. So it was something we took up pretty quickly, you know, realizing that we had to build him up through Pandaric, you know, to have this vibe at the end.
So you feel like Deathwing and Cataclysm didn't really deliver that for you guys? Or was it just, you know, Lich King obviously was more apparent, I guess?
Right. I think that Deathwing was a terrific bad guy in the sense that it's pretty obvious that he's an enemy, right? A giant kind of earth-destroying dragon. It's hard to argue with that. But I don't think we did a great job of keeping Deathwing involved in the storyline throughout the expansion. Unlike Lich King, which we had, you know, we had him during the whole questing experience. We kept him in your face a little bit more. So Deathwing kind of like fell off the map for a little bit and then, you know, kind of came back at the end. So I don't think that players felt the kind of personal connection with Deathwing as they did with Lich King or Garrosh.
That's cool. With it being towards the end of the expansion in terms of the patch cycle, what are your kind of major learnings, I guess, from the beginning to now, with obviously I think more so the new features you brought in? You know, are we farming enough on the tillers, you know, or you know, is the are scenarios the way forward? You know, what would you say are the kind of big wins?
Well, I would say the big wins are, I mean, the breadth of content as a whole for Mists of Pandaria was great. And the heroic scenarios, I feel like, were a real turning point for the scenarios themselves. I feel like that's something that we can continue to do going forward and you know, making sure that we have a good diversity of content. And then, you know, some of the major learnings were with the way that we do our outdoor max level content. Obviously, when Mists of Pandaria launched, we had a little bit too much of a focus on the daily quests, and that probably extended all the way up till patch 5.2. We've really kind of been trying to take that and find ways to evolve the end game world experience to be more dynamic and more interesting, so that it doesn't feel as repetitive. That was kind of a clear signal that, you know, I mean, we found it ourselves even playing at the end game. There's a point at which you just don't want to do those dailies anymore.
It's strange. I'm already exalted with the tillers, but I still every day do the tiller daily quests, and I think it's purely habitual. I benefit very little from it, but I feel like I need to kill some Hosen, and it just kind of fills the way.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the farm was a huge success for us, and that's something that you'll see us continue to build on in the future. And, you know, I really feel like we hit the right balance of it feeling compelling but optional enough. And that kind of balance is what we were trying to hit with the dailies. And I think that if we can find that right sweet spot for world content, then World of Warcraft can really continue to feel and thrive like it's a world, right? Because it's very important to us that players have that world experience and aren't simply, you know, queuing for things from a city all the time. You've got to break up that experience and make sure that it feels like the World of Warcraft and not the instances of Warcraft.
I mean, Corey, you're a big kind of mobile gamer. Are you? I always want to do a lot of these features now, like pet battles and farming and stuff. I want to have a version on my phone because they feel like things that would work really well in almost like a static touch interface. Is that something that you guys are looking at, or is it something that you don't think would work? Or, I mean, obviously you're talking about making the world feel more like a world, and I guess that would probably goes against that. But you know, what sort of things do you have in mind with mobile?
We certainly talk about that quite a bit, about are there opportunities, are there scenarios where something could work? I think a lot of times it's coming up with that idea that we feel like works best with World of Warcraft, so we don't run into that situation where you feel like you could do all your progression on mobile and then never be in the game, but vice versa, having something that could be on mobile, it gives you some interaction with the game, but you know, it keeps you playing the game. You have to go back into the game to get those rewards. So I think it's a matter of just finding that niche of something that feels right. Certainly something that we talk about and we discuss. You know, it's not like it's out there in space and we're not thinking about it or we're trying to avoid it. Yeah. I think it's just a matter of finding the right thing that works.
Right. Yeah. And the timing has to line up also. I mean, but really philosophically, it's exactly like Corey said. We want it to be complementary and not to replace the world gameplay. And we really just have to hit that right sweet spot with it.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, fishing would be the key example for me. I think I would fish if it was on my phone. But when I've got the option of fishing or doing a scenario, it doesn't really feel like there's much decision there for me to spend that time. But maybe a fish were worth more, but not to me. I don't know. So once 5.4 is out, what's next? What happens? You know, because the whole build-up was obviously Garrosh. We don't know what the next expansion is yet, and so it seems like we might find that out at BlizzCon. But it's probably not going to come out at BlizzCon, so there seems like there's going to be quite a gulf between now and the next expansion. So
build that up.
Yeah, I mean, I know the Timeless Isle is kind of built for a lot of exploration and a lot of kind of time sink fun in there. But what's going to keep us busy post, you know, farming Garrosh?
Well, we do expect to have a pre-expansion event that happens before the next expansion takes place. Still to be determined how far in advance of the next expansion that would be. So really 5.4 is the primary content that carries players over, but I think you'll find it very interesting what the kind of story connection is between patch 5.4 and the next expansion. It's really kind of all building towards something.
I'm really hoping it's like Grosh's mum is the next end boss, because she'd be pissed, you know? So. Mainly at him for just being a bit of a dick in the end, but obviously we took him out. I would like to thank whoever on the team decided that Grosh is going to drop his shoulders, his pauldrons. That's just the coolest thing now. Yeah. I think everyone's re-rolled, you know, a warrior or a paladin so they can, you know, wear them. I think that's going to be pretty special.
I've been telling the guys we need a caster end boss at some point so they can have the really cool, epic-looking thing at the end of the expansion. It always seems to be the play wearers.
They got Medivh's staff back in... Mm-hmm. Oh, actually, yeah, that was a little while ago. Yeah. But still, you know... So... Mist, it kind of feels like it provided something for everyone. And I don't know, most people who are playing it say it's their favorite expansion. Do you guys think, you know, what are the weak points there? What do you want to fix in the future?
Yeah, I mean, overall, I'm very happy with the way Mists of Pandaria played out. I'm definitely very proud of the work that the team has done on the expansion. I feel like if there was weakness, it would be that it would just be in the thematic appeal, right? You know, we had overwhelmingly heard from players over years and years leading up to Mists of Pandaria that Pandaren were really something they wanted to see develop more. But they turned out to be more controversial than we really expected. So, you know, that's not anything that I would say, you know, was done wrong. It's just that the appeal wasn't as widespread as I would have hoped. So just going forward, we'll have to keep that in mind more.
Yeah, the team really embraced Pandaria like crazy. I mean, we had a lot of ideas on the table of what we were going to do for 5.0, and when Pandaria and all of that became an option, everyone just instantly, yes, you know, right away. So I think all the passion and everything was there, but it's exactly like Tom said. It wasn't necessarily what people were expecting, something that was more of like a vacation, you know, to this beautiful, exotic place versus, you know, everything we had kind of done before had these very specific, hardcore kind of goals behind it. So in some ways, we liked the break, you know, but I think we're excited to get back to that more of that style of pure Warcraft, you know, Alliance versus Horde, these horrible bad, you know.
The world-ending shit.
The world stuff.
Like. Yeah, I think world-ending's always a winner, definitely. I mean, we've kind of messed up Pandaria a little bit, and especially now that the Veil apparently is like at the end of the trailer, like it's just going to be completely screwed. You know, once we defeat Grosh, like later on, is it going to be back to being beautiful, or have we forever kind of balls that up?
Well, we are planting the seed, I guess figuratively and literally, at the very end of patch 5.4. You guys will have to see more as you continue to play that. But yeah, there's a possibility that it could regrow to its former self.
Actually, doing it to the world was a pretty big decision. Honestly, we hadn't really done anything like that. I think other than maybe like the Argent tournament, where we actually changed. You know, between patches, the tournament was growing. It was kind of the last time we really changed the world like that. But it's something the team, and we really felt was important so that people knew how messed up Garrosh was, you know, and they could actually see that, you know, somewhere in the game world. It wasn't just existing in a book or in a cinematic or something. It was actually in the world. So I think that was a big turning point of something that's going to feel cool for players that we hadn't done before.
I mean, speaking of cinematics, the 5.4 trailer was like, I mean, holy crap. I'm just putting out there, like, feature length film, can we do that now? Is that surely, you know, if, because I mean, Grosh looks amazing, and obviously you guys are looking to redo the character race models, right. And I mean, orcs, I guess, were one of the first ones. They must be over a decade old now. Like, if player models can look like Grosh's orc, only obviously, you know, proper green skin, you know, we want to be corrupted. You know, what that means in terms of the look of the game.
Right.
And if you could then, you know, every sort of, you know, patch trailer and all of that, if they're of this sort of standard, like, I just want a film of that. I mean, you know, I'm sure Duncan Jones is going to do a good job, but I'm just saying, you know, you guys could do a little, you know, a different film. It'd be, you know, good fun.
Yeah, we definitely feel like the bar's been raised. You know, our production team for our in-game cinematics has really just been, you know, learning more and more as we go along and getting better and better. You know, it's the same group that's been doing our cinematics for us for years now.
All the way back, yeah.
So it's been a long path from, you know, Wrathgate, let's say, until here. But we're really hoping to continue to be able to push that forward as we go on.
We showed that cinematic at a team meeting at Blizzard for Team 2, the WoW team, I don't know, maybe 2 weeks before, two or three weeks before, and I think the whole team just kind of gasped when they were watching it. You know, the lights were down, they had the music cranking, and I think so many people were just, they knew that when it came out, people were going to kind of freak out, because, you know, we'd seen so many of them, and they're all good, right?
Yeah, right.
But when you see the end, and you see everything come together like
he's
that,
just such a badass walking away. Exactly. It's just like, part of me, I was like, I want to kill him, but at the same time, I'm thinking, like, I'm going to fist bump the hell out of him afterwards as well, like, because that was badass. That was like, I mean, have you guys, like, have you already seen the difference of people resubbing off the back of it? Because circumstantially, like on Twitter and stuff like that, literally everyone was like, oh shit, looks like I gotta come back. You know, that must be very effective.
Right. Well, it actually takes a while for us to see the impact numbers wise in terms of the reporting is always delayed because the way that we have to kind of account for churn and coming back, and what does it really mean? You know, is it that once they pay for their first month subscription and they stick around beyond the 30 days, all that kind of stuff? So I don't really have any numbers to be able to quote on that, but hopefully it'll have an impact. You know, it's very rare that we expect anything like this to have a like material impact on our numbers. But you know, it's totally worth doing because it makes us proud and it makes the fans happy and it gets people excited and that's really what it's all about.
When the team gets that excited and they've been crunching and working on this stuff and you see them freaking out, you know the fans are gonna like it, right? Yeah. So
they know how it ends and they're still excited, seeing this. So I mean, I think that's pretty cool. I think just really kind of, I think it surprised everyone just the level of animation and quality in it, and then just equally just how amazing and badass it was. I think it's I think one of the best things Blizzard's done, you know, as a company, and I think, you know, that's amazing that that's a patch trailer really as well at the same time.
We also had an advantage of having a longer period of iteration that we were able to do on it versus a lot of other trailers that we've done. Obviously that team is always under pressure to produce the next thing. They're scrambling to put together the BlizzCon trailer. There was another cinematic that players will be able to see once Kirosh is defeated.
Yeah,
right?
Nice.
So there are a lot of things that go in there, and for sure the trailer got a lot of extra attention and love. So for sure it's awesome.
Awesome. So kind of things that didn't quite make it seems the Dota style battleground is currently on hold. Is that something, because you guys, you know, kind of frustrating, I guess, have played it and enjoyed it, but for whatever reason it just wasn't quite there. Is that a big regret for you guys, you know, or in all fairness, does it happen so often now in terms of, you know, I kind of look at like Titan now, I'm sure you all play in that and we're like, this is great, but for whatever reason, it wasn't great enough. And I, you know, the bar, like you said, now with this patch trailer, you kind of continually keep setting things so high that each time the next thing comes along, you've got to just pull it out the bag again. You know, do you think that, you know, when it comes down to, you know, features like this, I mean, like the dance studio, I'm sure it's coming still, you know, everyone knows it's there. You know, is it going to be, you know, are we going to see, you know, features like this, you know, do you find that more stuff is on the cutting room floor nowadays because of how high the bar's set, or are you cutting as much as you always have?
I don't think it's necessarily that. I think it's that WoW, really, I don't think we on the team see the data mining. We're so used to that, you know? I don't think we try to hide anything necessarily. If players find stuff, we are always kind of experimenting with new battleground ideas, like new ideas for new types of dailies, new ideas for, you know, all kinds of stuff like this. And people data mine it, but they don't know the intention behind it or exactly, was it just an idea we were trying out? Were we really thinking it was going to go in the game? So I think a lot of times we're okay with talking about that stuff. Hey, yeah, we were giving it a shot, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to end up in the game. And there's a million reasons why it could be. The gameplay didn't work, the idea doesn't fit, you know, it could be a million things. But we usually players don't know what that is. They just think, they were doing this and now they cut it, you know? Yeah. You know, where we could have put you know, 3 days of work into it. We've cut things that we've put months of work into, you know, and it just, it runs the range there.
Yeah, for sure.
It's fair enough.
Yeah, and, I mean, we're still actively experimenting with the Dota-style battleground. There are a lot of things to try to work out because, obviously, we're not trying to get an exact parallel, you know, but in some ways you want some concepts that are shared, but there are such huge differences between, you know, playing World of Warcraft and playing the top-down kind of, you know, hero-based game that it creates a lot of additional wrinkles and complexity and things that we have to solve and try to get right for it to feel good.
I mean, the engines, again, I don't know how old the WoW engine is nowadays, but yeah, I mean, if you look back to, I guess, Peacebloom versus Ghouls, you know, you guys did a fair approximation of Plants versus Zombies. Do you think the engine's got that much more life left in it, or like the player models, is it something you guys are going to have to do a complete overhaul to?
Yeah, it's actually very hard to say because the engine has evolved over time, right? So the engine in its current form as it is today isn't really all that old, but, you know, of course there are parts of it, and there are certainly assets that are very old, you know, the character models being a prime example of that. So in a lot of cases, the engine is capable of more than what the assets are really doing, at least some of the older assets. So, you know, updating the character model is obviously a big push for us. I think that's probably the part of the game that feels the most dated right now. It's just that that's the part that is the most sensitive to players, and it's very difficult to change it without having somebody say, you know, well, yeah, my orc was really old, but when the orc got updated, his eyebrows went like that, and now I'm unhappy, right?
So. He looks confused all the time. Yeah. You know, Thorog the Shore is now, you know, slightly bemused. Can you just put a checkbox in and we can just have them now? Can you just, like, put, like, an interface option, like, show helm, show old model, you know, and then I can play with a new character. I mean, at the moment I'm playing a Tauren, and, you know, they don't look as good as they could, I guess. You know,
for sure.
It's, I think, you know, in humans,
We're working really hard on the new character models. It's definitely something that's a high priority on the list.
Is it likely to be a sort of an expansion feature, really, just in terms of, because it's such a big thing, it kind of feels like it would shift boxes as well.
Right.
You know, 1 minute. Okay, no worries.
It is quite possible that it will be, although it is still difficult to say at this point whether or not, even when we do it, whether it will be all the races at the same time. It's very likely to still be a staged rollout, simply because the sheer amount of stuff that there is to do. And I don't know that we're going to want to make everybody wait until everything is done. So we'll have to see, but actively work.
Are you going
to
try and base it in lore? Are we going to have some sort of, you know, no? No, I wasn't sure. Some goblin plastic surgeon, like the barbershop. That'd be nice.
No current plan to do that. That's pretty funny. Okay. I hadn't even thought of it.
No, well, there you go. I mean, charge, you know, 50,000 gold or something, you know, extortionate. And then if I can get a cut of that, that would be amazing. Right. I think that would be. I would really like to see more of that kind of just a way
we'll
to
put it on the Blizzard store, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Why not? I mean, on the just to kind of finish on that, I think, you know, I think I might be slightly unpopular for saying it, but I really want you guys to sell max level characters.
Uh-huh.
You know, I've leveled up so many now, and when I want to play with friends or I want another character on a different realm, it's such a time investment. I feel like that's the most valuable thing for me now.
Mm-hmm.
And I see, like, the leveling boost,
yeah.
And I see the leveling boost that you're suggesting for the Asian markets, and I think that they would be great over here. But equally, I think go a step further, and, you know, if I can just buy, you know, a max level character, I do like Proving Grounds or something like that before I can play with it in the open world just to show I'm not a complete noob.
Yep.
You know, I think that's something that a lot of people would actually, you know, really enjoy. Just that option to be able to jump in, and like people who've been out for, you know, 2-3 years coming back rather than have to level up to the cap to then enjoy the new expansion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe they can buy, you know, a capped character now for the new expansion. And as long as, like I said, you can complete a few tests. You know, I just think that sort of thing could be quite cool. I mean, you guys must be playing about with microtransactions or premium transactions or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ruled anything out at the moment, or is it all...
No, we definitely haven't ruled anything out. There's definitely a strong argument for that. I think that one of the most important values that we have going forward is trying to get players able to get back into the game and able to play with their friends and lowering those barriers to getting back into the game. You can definitely make an argument that having to level up a character is one of those barriers.
Mm.
So, you know, it's certainly worthy of consideration, and you know, we'll always kind of keep that in our minds, and when the time's right, maybe that'll happen.
great. And again, just, you know, 1%, 2% of that revenue, I'm happy to take. You know, in-game gold version as well. You can convert it. It's all going to help. It's all going to help. But thank you. Thank you very much for your time. Cheers. Thank you. Cheers. Thank you.
It's the Town Crier.
Hey, everybody, it's the Town Crier, and that means your emails and your calls. Today, it's all calls. I shouldn't have led you on earlier. It's all calls, no emails, because we got a bunch here, and we're burning the midnight oil. So here you go. By the way, brought to you by DoghouseSystems.com. DoghouseSystems.com. Never been a better time to buy a high-end gaming machine. Speaking of Saints Row the Fourth, I don't know if anyone's seen video, but the comparison between the PC version of that game and any of the console versions is jaw-dropping. I just love my PC and can't get enough of it, and you'll be the same. DoghouseSystems.com, where you can use Henry for double the memory. That's the code Henry. That'll give you double the RAM, or GERP will get you $50 at slashloot.com for free T-shirts. That's GERP or Henry for double the memory. DoghouseSystems.com. All right, when you want to call us, you can. The number is 206-202-3969, 206-202-3WOW. That works, and will send us messages. We're happy to read them on the show. If they're longer than 30 seconds, chances are you'll be skipped over for other shorter ones. So that's an important thing to mention occasionally. Email us your attachments or your thoughts at theinstance@gmail.com. All right, start with calls here. Thoughts on leveling slowly in the World of Warcraft.
Hey, Scott Dills and Terpster. This is Dirt, Orc Elemental Shaman on Area 52. You had a call last week about a guy that was talking about being able to tune the speed of leveling in older zones so that you can spend more time there, see the zone, learn the lore, etc. I would say not a lot of people are in that mindset. With Blizzard implementing so many different ways to speed up leveling, rested experience, heirloom items, the potion that drops in Pandaria that gives you an hour of extra experience, and now they're going to put something in the store, something like that lets you level faster. I think a lot of people are against leveling slowly. Long live Chain Lightning.
There's going to be a... He's right. I think the majority of people don't want to slow down.
Most people want to get there as quickly as possible and bypass all of the... If there's not a reason, like some sort of loot drop or something that they're going to get out of this, they just want to get it and go. Mm-hmm. And that is the majority of the WoW base right now. But, you know, that call was specifically somebody who wanted to slow it down, wanted to experience everything. And we've heard this before from a few people who say, it really sucks when I out-level the zone I'm in and I haven't done all the quests. You know, these are kind of completist type people who want to see all the stuff, get all the lore, do everything.
Can't blame them. You know, they want to do the thing they want to do, and that's great. And they'll still be able to. I mean, that's the point is they may not have systems in place to make that incredibly easy, but you can turn off XP and scour the area and do what you want to do before you leave.
Yeah.
Just remember to turn it back on when you go.
Yeah.
I understand what he's saying, and I agree. And Blizzard is definitely right now doing things in service of quicker leveling. So it goes to show that they also know what the player base wants. And I think the writing's on the wall. There is no mandate to slow things down.
No. You know, I mean, we're not ever going to get a reverse of what's happening.
Right.
It's just not coming into play.
Yeah.
It's always going to be faster, faster, faster. But every time, you know, an expansion comes out, it's going to feel slow again after all of this, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember when Pandaria hit, I was like, oh my God, 85 to 90 takes forever.
Yeah.
Especially 89 to 90. That was just,
oh my gosh.
That was a slog. I mean, I just couldn't get there.
And I didn't even finish the zones. That's the funny bit. I still felt like it took forever, but even then I didn't finish all the zones.
Yeah.
Or all the stuff in the zones. It's true. The steps are like still telling me to come do crap when I go down there.
Yeah. Well, that's because we, you know, we have friends in the game, and so we did like dungeons a few times and things like that. If you were to be kind of just rocking it solo, I think it was kind of set up to kind of perfectly pace you through.
Yep.
But when you're doing battlegrounds and dungeons and all that, then it's going to speed that up a little bit.
I'm going to agree. Here's some thoughts on the Dark Below.
Hey, guys. I just thought of an idea for the the Dark Below, and it kind of hit me with the whole expansion coming out with Durash under Orgrimmar. What about the Depths Below, or the Dark Below being all of Azeroth? You're under Azeroth, and you're fighting under the Barons, or you're fighting under Ashara, or it's just literally under the entire continent that already exists.
So that's an interesting take, but I think it's pretty much a given that we're either going under the ocean and then beyond that, or we're going underground somewhere, or something.
Well, yeah, there could be an underground portal that takes us to another world. I mean, there's also, you know that, oh my God. What's the dwarf city, dude?
Oh, the, hold on. Ironforge.
We're so good at forgetting names, man. It's amazing.
Ironforge.
But Ironforge has a whole thing underneath it already, so there could be something about that.
How much time do we spend on Horde cities? That's the question.
Dude, that's the thing. I don't go to Ironforge unless I'm going there to kill people.
Right.
But yeah, so they have the whole it's kind of already built out and everything. It's all underneath Ironforge, and you used to be able to get there by tweaking through a little bug, and you could actually explore it. So
it's also very alliance heavy storyline could happen there, which I think they're about due. So I'm actually with you that it is an Ironforge centric experience that is where we will get there.
Haven't seen it yet.
A bunch of dwarves will be hacking away in the ground doing some excavation, and somebody will go, "Oh no, we found a way to blip a blip," and it's gonna we're all going in there. I guarantee it. I have no insider info, but if this isn't dwarf and iron forge and old gods or something related under the dirt over there, then I will be shocked.
Yeah.
Utterly shocked. All right.
Yeah. By the way, Holo Tape. That's a great T-shirt. I didn't even think about it when I said it, but I want that T-shirt too.
What is it? What's the name?
Says, I don't go to Ironforge unless I'm going there to kill people.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
I want that.
All right. Here's...
Come on, Jakes, where you at?
Yeah, where you at, yo? Here it is. Why people come to the game, or why people come back, more importantly.
Scott, Deals, Terp. This is Blair from... I don't really have a server, because I kind of don't play, but I do. Anyways, calling because Dill said something last week about how there's been a lot of people saying that they're going to resubscribe. Well, I'm one of them, and I was wondering why you think that is. My thoughts are they're bringing back an enemy, someone that you can get behind. You say, I want to beat this guy down. I think that's a good enough reason to come back into WoW and get me excited to fight again. So give me your thoughts. Thanks.
Okay, I agree. I think it's
Definitely.
Yeah,
definitely. Durash is going to be a big calling card to a lot of people. Like, I got to go. That guy is such a bastard.
Yeah,
I got to go kill him.
Yeah,
he's so cocky. You know, he's like, yeah, bring it on. I want everyone to come after me.
Don't you also think it's something? I mean, I don't think we can underestimate or understate how crucial that trailer is. That trailer it hits all the right notes. It talks about all the right stuff. It gets you fired up. It's like anything that gets you excited, you know, visually and orally, like you're hearing it through your ears, right? I didn't want to think of something that oral something. Anyway, like anything that's good at doing that, this trailer does that in spades, and it's extremely well done and fires you up, whether you are all in already or not. Everyone's feeling a renewed sense of, it's on. It's not some obscure enemy that I don't understand or I can't get my head around or maybe is a little bit more esoteric. No, this is straight up Garage Hell Scream. He is just a giant, huge dick, and we got to go. Let's go.
Yeah. Well, what was the last enemy, though, big enemy that didn't feel that way? I mean, maybe Deathwing. Like, I remember when Deathwing first came out, I was like, wait, who is this Deathwing guy again? I remember something about it, but...
Right. Yeah, Deathwing didn't really have the
center.
Yeah, and he wasn't as relatable. Like, he's just a giant dragon,
giant dragon just wants to kill everything.
And all the aspects walking around going, I've lost my power now. So all the sand's running out of my pauldrons. Like, what does any of this mean? Like, it's all a little bit higher.
I'm sure lore nerds are pulling their hair out right now. Like, he's the biggest bad guy ever. You know, but
and that's fine. We're just talking about what is relatable to average to moderate players.
Average Scott. Dickinson Johnson and William Morrison Dills.
Right.
Yeah. So we are not big lore nerds. So we're not like we're big nerds, just not big lore nerds.
We've all known racist Nazi bullies before in our life. We know people that are fascist bastards who want their own way no matter what. And they're so egotistical they can't get over themselves.
And I've always wanted to shoot them in the face with an arrow.
Exactly. So why the hell not? This is like, here's our chance. He's bigger than life without being too big. And I'm all down with it. Like, you know what? You want your old god tentacle monster to fight again? Well, I'll bet you the dark below is going to give you all you need.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that's the thing. The only time I've ever killed something where I was like, wait, why are we killing this guy? What's so bad about him? Is the old god stuff? I'm like, wait, what did this guy do?
Yeah.
Why is he so bad that I got to kill him? I don't understand.
Why is this brain sequence the worst thing ever?
Right. How come he gives us a portal into his brain? What the hell? That was a really big oversight on his part.
I mean, even the Thunder King is kind of overly esoteric. Like, it's just like, oh, another guy with amazing powers, and he should be dead, but he's not, and he's immortal, and, you know, here we go, and he can shoot lightning, and meh. Like, but that's fine.
You have to have those guys.
They're great. Exactly.
You know, you have to have something to kill in between. But, like, when I watch this trailer, and then I see the ending part where he's like, I've gathered all of these monsters, and this is my defense system. I want all of you to come try to kill me because I've already got all these things in my way.
Yeah.
This is my army. This is the new horde. Like, that all just makes sense to me. I got to kill these guys because behind all these guys is that guy.
Right.
And I need to get him because he's trying to kill everybody.
Yeah.
And he wants to take over, and he wants to be the man.
In a way, it's like, you know, pull out your Lord of the Rings movie and decide in Fellowship of the Ring who is, or even, I guess, the second movie is where he showed up. But where do you get more pissed? Do you get more pissed at a giant Balrog who's been living under the city? Or do you get more pissed at, like, Wormtongue, who is completely jacking up a kingdom through being a little weasel and a bastard? You know what I mean? Like, you can relate to that guy, and you can go track him down and take him out, despite any mystical help he may get. But Wormtongue is a relatable villain that you really can get mad and get behind and get in front of. Whereas, you know, a Balrog is like, oh, what the hell's that? I don't know. He's all made of fire and stuff. Well, this seems bad. Okay, well, throw down a thing and say you shall not pass. Oh, his tail got me in the foot. I guess I'm going down with him, and who knows if I'm really dead. Frodo's crying. Like, it's a cool thing, and it looks neat, and it's all those things, but the personal thing is missing, and this is personal with Garrosh Hellscream.
Yeah.
It's personal.
Yeah. And he is asking for it, right. So
He's such a dick. They're no longer part of my horde. What are you saying, man? What are you saying?
He kicked us all out of his horde, dude.
Those other orcs, I'm mad at them, because...
Yeah. Well, you know what? We all know the real horde is coming, and we're going to get his ass.
Yeah.
It's going to be good.
That's right.
It's going to be very satisfying when he goes down.
Let's go, man. Flex raid. Let's go. That's it. All calls this week. Thank you guys for sending those in. Again, send those to 206-202-3969 or email us theinstance@gmail.com. No drop of the week this week. However, we do have a contest winner. Last week, we said we were giving away one copy of World of Warcraft Bloodsworn, new comic book, hardbound DC published book from Doug Wagner and Jeremy Rapik. And I have two now to give away. Not just one. Giving away two random winners who entered our contest. Thank you guys for all entering. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of you entered, although we had almost 5,000 people enter for that beta key during the week. So the odds were not good for you beta people, but the odds were much better for the hundreds that entered the contest to win the comic. Our two winners this week are John Burnett and Derek Rookard. Derek Rookard or Rookard? I don't know how you'd say it.
He rooks hard, man.
There you go. I got both your emails. So John and Derek, I'll send you guys your confirmation. You'll send me your addresses, and these will be off in the mail to you. Thanks again. You were randomly picked to win two copies of this book. And again, courtesy of Blizzard, who sent these out as pre-reviews. I don't even think these are on the store shelves yet. So that's how cool these are.
Very nice.
Big thanks to them, and grats to you guys. Want to thank, quick special thanks goes out to GameTimeZone.com, who, if you use the discount Warcraft, they'll give you 5% off at GameTimeZone.com. That's it. That's a show, dude. That is a long
show. Go play some Hearthstone.
Yeah, just me and you talking was long, but look at these two interviews. I want to thank everybody who participated in that. Chris and his team, all you guys are awesome. Big thanks to Terpster for taking time to track those guys down in Germany and get some stuff out of them as well. And big thanks to you, Dills. Anything going on this week you want people to be aware of?
Well, for TortureCast, we're going to be in the press box on Saturday with our good friend Eric from Two Out Hits. So check out the podcast that comes out after that.
Yeah.
And that's it.
I'm still mad for them leaving New York. That's how I am about.
I'm not. I'm happy about it.
I've been watching. I'm finishing up that for the fourth or third or fourth time that Ken Burns baseball documentary.
So good.
It's really, really good. And the whole, there's a whole big chunk of stuff on when the Giants left. And
the whole last part though, with all the juicing stuff, always gets my blood boiling. And then the whole thing with A-Rod and everything recently, it's just my blood is boiling once again.
I know, dude.
Yeah. I mean, look, everybody knows I'm a Giants fan. We all know Barry Bonds. I get it.
Yep.
You know, I'm not happy about that situation as well, but
right.
I'm glad that that's all behind us as far as the Giants are concerned, and now I'm just mad at Ryan Braun and A-Rod.
Yeah.
Bastards.
Well, my favorite part may have been, it's weird because I used to not like the more modern stuff because I love the old-timey crap, but I love the coverage of the 1975 World Series between the Reds and is it Boston? Who's the other team? Anyway, that looked like the most intense, amazing extra innings thing I've ever seen. That sixth game just blew my freaking mind. And I'm not even that big of a baseball guy, and I just loved it. So, check out Terpstra on that.
Why baseball is the greatest sport ever, right?
Why is that?
Well, but there's no clock, and to win, you actually have to get the other guys out the requisite number of times. And that makes it so that it's just, you know, the pressure is on. Like, there's no... You're never kneeling at the end of the game, which is just so annoying. You're never fouling on purpose at the end of the game. Yep. Like,
that's true.
There's never pulling the goalie because we're friggin' desperate. Like, it's no. I could just keep on getting hits and keep on getting on base.
Yeah, or you could just keep striking people out or whatever. Yeah. You have this arbitrary, not time limit, but thing limit that is... I agree. I totally agree.
Yeah. So to me, that's just like one of the most perfect ways to have a sport work is just... No, you have to get 27 outs. That's how you win this game. It doesn't matter how long it takes.
Right.
You got to do it.
Yep. If you ever listen, there's a great George Carlin thing about the differences between baseball and football, and it's fantastic.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've seen that.
You play on a field, on a diamond, and you're trying to go home. In football, you're on a gridiron, and you have four quarters, and you got to... It's really funny. You guys should catch it. All right, that's it. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Appreciate your willingness to listen live and those at home. Thank you guys so much. I want to thank Matthew Oxley at MatthewOxley.com for our theme. He's currently working on a new one. I can't wait to hear what it is. We try to do this once a year or so. Leave us a review on iTunes and other podcast directories. We love that when you do. Thank you, Paul Swickard, our intern. Our forum show notes and everything else that both he and others put up are on theinstance.net. On Twitter, you can find us at Instance Show. Also, Scott Johnson, Willie Dills, and the_T on Facebook, where it's /theinstance. Find more great shows just like this at frogpants.com. That'd be my recommendation. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Dills, and for the traveling all around Europe Terpster. We'll see you next time.
Job's done. Boop.
Visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.